Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
All right, it's Wednesday night, August 18th. You know what that means.
Yeah.
It is time for the Mark Order Podcast. I'm Aunt Money. I'm here with Kate. What's up, Kate?
Just living the dream. How are you doing?
I'm good. I am very good. It's been a long, short week so far, but... It's my favorite time of the week, to be honest. It's Wednesday night. We get to talk about wrestling. We get to watch a little AEW Dynamite.
That's true. Happy CM Punk week to you.
Allegedly.
Happy CM Punk day to you.
Alleged unconfirmed CM Punk week.
Sure. But like it is.
Kate, if for some grace of God, there is a no-show, I will laugh so hard.
I will cry.
Oh my God. It will be the greatest troll ever.
A phenomenal troll, but if I leave ROH early for it, I will be sad.
Oh my God. It will be amazing. We'll talk about all that stuff. We'll get there eventually. We've got a lot to talk about tonight. We've got to talk about Dynamite. We've got some other news and notes. We're going to cover just a tiny bit of AAA, Triple Mania. We'll talk about Rampage, even though you already talked about it. We're going to talk about it here with our people on the Mark Order Podcast. But first, I want to let everybody know we look a little shorthanded tonight. So let's address the elephant in the room. So we knew Matt wasn't joining us tonight. Matt let us know that he is with the pizza truck at the PGA Tour here in New Jersey. Crazy thing is Matt is like 6 under par right now. And he's not even a professional. So I didn't know he was really a pro level golfer. So that's pretty amazing.
I had no idea, because he doesn't really have the finesse maybe that you would think a golfer would have. But it is impressive. He's doing really well and climbing right up the leaderboard. So
it is amazing. Kate's yelling at Buster, so that's fine. But Matt is at the PGA Tour, early days all week for him. So we knew he wasn't going to be joining us. The real surprise heel turn came also pretty early this morning. I wasn't even awake and I woke up to the tweet. Well, maybe I was like half awake, but, Ryan Schlong informed us that his first official show will be a no-show. So he has terribly mismanaged his time. He's apparently dog sitting for terrible dogs, who apparently he said, don't leave him alone and don't shut up. I did remind him that, you know, Kate, you were sexually assaulted by Buster on the show.
I was sexually assaulted by my dog. The Red Rocket came out. I was just trying to retrieve his ball from under the couch. And he, in a Ric Flair-like fashion, the dirtiest player in the game, took advantage. And there's no other way to say it. He tried to mount me. My dog tried to mount me while I was trying to retrieve his toy from under the couch. But I guess I'm just a little more dedicated than Ryan is, despite the fact that we just promoted him. So, though I will give him credit, he's been killing it on our Twitter, live tweeting during AEW Dark. But, you know, I guess he just doesn't show up when it counts, kind of like a Nyla Rose situation. He's just like a beast. And then when we get to the big day, he just kind of can't do it.
Yeah.
Wardlow of him.
Who knows? I mean, we'll see if Ryan ever returns, to be honest. I mean, this is a no-show night one. I mean, your official first night as the fourth man.
No, he just got signed.
Man. Well, either way. So you are true in what you said. Ryan was killing it on Twitter. Although I will say, Kate, while I was hoping for there to be many less puns, There were still too many bad puns, and that is not what our Twitter is about. So it
is my young grasshopper.
We're going to have to figure out the pun ratio, or we're just going to change the password altogether and nobody's going to do it. Wow. Because there's just too, although I will say this, went over real well with Marco Stunt, went over real well with Sammy Guevara, went over real well with Lance Archer. So thanks to all those guys, if they ever listen to this, for showing us some Twitter love. Yeah, Ryan Schlong was killing it on Twitter for us on the darks Monday and Tuesday. We just found out, maybe it was news, but we literally tonight watching Dynamite found out there's a special dark tomorrow, which I don't know if Ryan will get a chance to tweet along with. Maybe he will. Just keep an eye on our Twitter handle. If you're not following us on social, you should be at Mark Order Pod, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, you know, because we're out there. Ryan is going to tweet along with Dark. And I guess a programming note too, Kate, while we're kind of on it, with Rampage here tonight, we're not going to really focus on Dark. We might bring up Dark for like two or three little things. And Ryan really kind of covered everything on Twitter. So we're not going to necessarily cover it tonight. We might not cover it again next week, but we are working out kind of everything with Ryan here now. We might be doing Dark in a different platform. So you should be following us on social, because we're probably going to do it in one of our social channels. So stay tuned. We're going to continue to cover Dark in some fashion, but maybe just not here in the long form like we used to. So there's your programming note. And also, Kate, stickers are coming.
Stickers are coming, and thank you for spearheading those, because the mock-ups of them look awesome. So if you want a Mark Order sticker, tweet at Mark Order Pod and we'll see what we can do for y'all.
Yeah, we're going to figure out how we're going to do, like, you know, if you want a sticker, we'll send you a few of those. So we'll figure it out, but keep an eye on our socials. Definitely DM us so we know that you're interested, and then we'll let everybody know how we're giving them away. So keep an eye out there. But enough of the plugs for us, because we're not just shameless plug whores. Let's get to business, Kate. I think we should start with Rampage because it happened on Friday night. So we had our debut episode of Rampage. You know, we don't have to go through this like we do the normal Dynamite, but I figured for the first episode, we should give our maybe initial impressions here, right? Because there were a lot of things we were hearing leading up to it. Like, we heard there was going to be a completely different, unique set. We heard that there was the possibility that the middle of the ring was going to have AEW's logo on it. You know, we were hearing all this type of stuff, and then, you know, it showed up and the show premiered and it was a good show, but maybe we didn't get some of those things. So I guess, you know, what are your first impressions about, like, the vibe of the show, the feel, even things like the set, you know, maybe that wasn't necessarily delivered on?
My God, I'm sorry. My dog is being a terrorist. He just has a lot of feelings about Rampage.
I know he does.
He really does. So I would just, I think maybe like a different set and ring is coming. It's been noted that sometimes on media calls, Cody Rhodes says things that, like, he says are going to be true that either A, just don't come true, or B, like, don't come true in the time frame that they say they're going to come true. And so I think you might see the Rampage personality build out a little bit more over time. But my biggest takeaway from the whole thing was just, like, A, like, the four-man booth felt a little crowded overall, but had some really cool spots. Initially, I think Jericho went a little overkill as far as, like, doing, like, his heel thing when he's a face and there's three other people to compete with. So that's my only, like, complaint from the setup. But I think you're going to see the personality change a lot. And as far as the content goes, we can get into that too. But, like, they made it feel can't miss pretty immediately.
Yeah, you know, while you deal with Buster, I'm with you. I think that a set's going to be coming, you know, and maybe they're going to change the ring and do some of those things that were quote unquote promised. Who knows? Maybe it's another, you know, it's kind of another one of those casualties of some of the supply chain issues or the demand issues among COVID. where things are supposed to be coming in and things get delayed and you know how that goes. Maybe that's going to happen. So I think like it's okay. We'll see that coming. We'll see that come through at some point. As far as the four-man booth goes, I'm not necessarily worried about that right now, only because I think at some point Jericho's coming off that booth, right? Fozzy's going to tour, and he's not going to be there every Friday. And, you know, I don't think he's going to be a permanent fixture. I think they're eventually going to move him off. But I will say this, and I read something interesting this week. I don't remember where it was from, but it was like an op-ed piece. I kind of thought of it, but the example was perfect. Is somebody said that they didn't necessarily have a problem with Jericho kind of yelling and being louder than usual, because to them it added a big fight feel. And to be honest, we were in the Discord, me, Schlong, you know, Joe, maybe somebody else. I can't remember who, if you were in hanging out with us, but we were in the Discord doing the watch along. So I didn't get to hear too much commentary, but I did read a lot of that Jericho was loud. And they said, a lot of people said they thought it was like a big fight. It gave a big fight feel, or a couple people. And then others said it was just way too loud. The one example I saw, Kate, was the fact that like there were times in the past, Rowdy Roddy Piper was often screaming as well, right? Like when he did commentary for the E, and it was the same thing. Like it was during big matches, big fights, so it kind of added to the vibe, like if it's so loud in here you can't hear what I'm saying, you know. That was kind of like the fear. So I guess to me that kind of makes sense, but again, I don't think it's going to be an every week thing. I think it was a night one, you know, we'll work the kinks out. I mean, to me, Excalibur and Taz, just great.
Yeah, and I think it was more just Jericho combined with the fact that there were three other people and Mark Henry just kind of felt like a little awkward all night. My vote is that they move Mark Henry to like a backstage role or do some more of the stuff like JR was doing with like pre-recorded interviews or whatever until maybe he gets his sea legs a little bit more. But in the very beginning, Jericho was giving us so much context for Christian and Kenny Omega. He talked about Canada. He talked about the history of the titles, which was really great because, as we've talked about, you know, they haven't talked about the Impact titles very much. And now all of a sudden it's supposed to be super important, right? So there were a lot of things he did really well. I just felt like it felt kind of crowded to have like a very loud Jericho too. Like it's one thing to be yelling and then it's another to be like yelling over Mark Henry a little bit, but they'll get that settled. You know, I think the Dynamite crew was not perfect off the bat either. And they found their sea legs with that. So I think moving forward, we'll probably see them make the necessary adjustments. And as you said, Jericho probably isn't going to be there every week, but was definitely there to make it feel like a big deal in the first week.
For sure. You know, as far as the 1 hour length of the show, I think it was perfect, right? You listen, three matches, you're in, you're out. It's kind of high impact. There's no room for kind of like filler crap. So it's all got to make sense. And I think for this number one show, I was talking about it over the weekend. For this first show, I almost feel like, and obviously we know what's coming this week, what we think is coming, allegedly confirmed. Like it's going to be hard to keep up this level every week, right? Like,
yeah,
this first, I
don't think they can, but I think this first month is going to have a hell of a run.
Yeah.
Because you had your first one, you had Punk, you have All Out around the corner.
Allegedly.
Right. I'm sorry. The alleged CM Punk, but like they did what 750,000 for their first week, and they were pulling between 400,000 and 500,000 when Dynamite had moved to Friday. So people were definitely tuned in and interested. Whether Punk shows up or not, the hype of that is going to get people to tune in. So let's say they do draw 1 million next week. It's just a matter of what are they going to sustain. I don't think we're going to know what like a true Dynamite number is going to look like. Maybe until after Arthur Ashe, if the other rumors are true about like a Daniel Bryan. Like, what are those actual numbers going to look like if Tony Khan at some point puts his foot on the brake a little bit with some of these surprises that are coming down the pike? So I think it's going to be a little bit before we see what that realistically looks like. But to your point, we talk about it all the time. When Dynamites are great front to back, how it feels like a 20-minute episode. This went so fast for me as a viewer. Like,
absolutely.
It evaporated. But everything that we got still felt like it had its own flavor and personality, which I really loved. Like, the women's match, what happened with Fuego, and we'll start off with, I guess, this opening match immediately made it feel like Can't Miss Television.
Yeah, absolutely. And just because you mentioned the rating, I want to make sure we give it. It was 740,000. And the show did a 0.31 in the 18 to 49 demographic. It was the third best among cable originals on August 13th, and it trailed only two preseason NFL or preseason games on the NFL network. So it's surely better than what they did. And of course, I think, like with everything now, it's like, you know, NFL pretty much rules anything the night it's on, you know, Monday Night Football, all that kind of stuff.
It rules ass.
It doesn't, but it rules the ratings. So anyway, it did pretty good. We'll see what this week does with all the rumors going on. But anyway, you're right. So this did start out super hot. Now, to be honest, we knew what the main event was going to be in Britsburg. I didn't necessarily think this was, well, actually, that's a lie. They said it was going to open the show, but still, like, even just thinking about this match, like, I'm still kind of like, I would never think this would open the night, even though they said it. I'm like, it would never open. Christian versus Kenny Omega, and actually defeating Kenny Omega. It makes you feel like you can't miss this show, right? Like, anything can happen.
Yeah, to have not only, first of all, the match itself was phenomenal. There were so many great sequences in there. All those snapdragons were great, minus the refereeing bullshit. There were so many great things that happened from a wrestling perspective in this match. By far, Christian's best match since returning to AEW, and I think a standout in his career in general. But to have that high quality of a match, and I don't want to call it a booking surprise because I thought this might actually happen, but definitely wasn't an assumed outcome by any stretch of the imagination. Immediately you are interested. And if they are looking for that SmackDown audience that maybe clicked over, like, they're going to recognize Christian, and then to have him win a title and then to be like, wait, Impact, isn't that what TNA was? Like, it was very smart planning with the sequencing of the show. But to your point, I knew it was opening, but then when it's the first thing you see, you kind of have that, oh shit, moment again.
Right. Right. It's, you know, the other thing it does for me too, Kate, is with Kenny losing this belt, it automatically makes you stay invested in that story, right? Because it's like, okay, where do they go now? Like, is he going to lose another belt right away? Cause he was scheduled on Triple Mania on Saturday. So, you know, is he going to lose that belt? What's really going to happen at All Out? Like, it puts all these seeds of doubt sort of in your head. So, so I think that it automatically keeps you invested. I think it was a really smart way to book this first match and to set up this new show. I had no issues with this match. I thought it was fantastic.
No, there were so many great spots in it. My notes from it all were just like sequences that I wrote down. It's pretty wild. So really, really fantastic stuff. And it was cool to see. I feel like Christian's conditioning has grown so much from when he first entered, like his stamina. And I don't know if it was just like the pace that Kenny was working with him at, but this was by far the best that Christian looked. And even going into the post-match promo, I thought it was fantastic. Like this, like, hey, no, I actually beat you and I won a title, so I'm in your head now, made me more invested in a second match that I was not as excited about for the grand kahuna of titles. So even if that moves forward, which I'm still suspicious of that, I'm more excited about it because of the post-match story that Christian told after.
Absolutely. And the fun thing there too was Orange Cassidy was just chilling in backstage. Like there's no rhyme or reason to that, because they're lining him up for something else. But it was just fun to see, like, hey, Orange Cassidy's just chilling there on the set. We also got Miro versus Fuego del Sol. And around this match, they did do, you know, kind of a Fuego hype video, because this was for, you know, probably the biggest match of his life, right? It was to get a contract if he won, and he'd also be the TNT champion. So, of course, everybody says Miro's going to come out and just toss him around right away. Well, Fuego del Sol gets super close, hits like three tornado DDTs on him, and just when you think he's maybe there, Miro squashes the shit out of him. and that match is pretty much over. But Miro rips up his contract. And then, we get our feel-good moment, right? Tony Khan is seen on TV coming out to the ramp with Sammy Guevara. They hug. He gives him a contract. And basically, Sammy lets Fuego know that he has been signed to AEW. So, listen, I thought this match was perfect. Like, the way that they lined everything up, they reminded you that, hey, Miro's a little susceptible to the tornado DDT. He came super close, but of course we knew Miro couldn't drop it to Fuego. And they do give you that feel-good moment. Now, personally, did I need this, the feel-good moment? No. Like, I feel like they didn't necessarily need to put that stipulation on this match and then give it to him here, but it is what it is. Like, they pulled it off, right? I honestly think, like, most people saw this coming, right? Like, I mean, I turned to Mrs. Money on the couch. I was like, no matter what, they're signing him tonight. Like, it's going to happen on TV, you know, and sure enough, it happened. But listen, it was good for what it was.
I agree. And going back to before, like, what we were saying about it being a bit of a sampler platter, like, now you have this feel good moment. You had like this booking surprise and this great, more technical match to open. And then you have this match. So the match itself too, like the storytelling was perfect because it made you be like, it did plant that seed of doubt. Like, I definitely thought Miro was going over, but those three tornado DDTs from the master himself, you were like, oh shit, are they going to do this? And then he just got his ass squashed. So I loved the storytelling in the match. And then, you know, it's been a reported shoot. I don't think anybody was surprised that Fuego got signed, but this moment at least was a shoot. Sammy and Tony Khan were the only ones in the company that knew this was going to happen. So you got a really authentic reaction from Fuego, but I just loved this. You had like this, what felt like a real life moment, completely juxtapositioned against a surprise booking change and a really great match to open the show. So you're getting the variety of what AEW can offer you already. And where, I mean, half hour in probably at this point, 40 minutes maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. We were just, I think, slightly over the halfway mark.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, but yeah, I mean, listen, they did this all well. They were pumping up obviously this week's, Chicago, Chicago Rampage. And we also got an interview backstage. You know, Mark Henry did an interview with Red Velvet and Britt Baker, you know, kind of jabbing at each other. And then we get to the main event, which is Britt Baker and Red Velvet. Again, I don't think anybody thought that Britt Baker was going to lose this match. Yeah. She won with the lockjaw. What the surprise came here was that after the match was over, you know, she obviously had her hero moment in Britsburg. She continued to attack Red Velvet. Like, you know, she did really heelish stuff after being so babyface in her hometown. And that's when Chris Statlander, who was ringside, you know, watching this match, jumped in to make the save. But we found out, Kate, who this hired gun is for Britt Baker. And for all the stuff that we thought it could be, it was sort of out of left field. It's Jamie Hayter. She is Britt Baker's new muscle. And it should be said that Jamie Hayter and Fuego, obviously getting signed, are now all Elite officially. And we'll talk a little bit about what's going on with Jamie Hayter later. But Kate, what did you think of the match? I mean, obviously we knew where it was going to go, but you know, did this impress you? Was this what we wanted to see out of a main event women's match?
I thought this was a really strong match. It's not like the lights out level was, but I think it was one of Britt's stronger matches, and Red Velvet has come so far. I think it's been really cool to watch her grow. And there was a story going into it, which is more than I could say for a lot of women's matches. So I felt like it delivered on a lot of areas as far as like storytelling and, having some like emotional appeal. And I thought ring-wise, this was a really strong effort too, and probably one of the longer matches in the women's division. So it was good to see. I know we both have had complaints about Britt getting gassed out, you more than me, but it is a justifiable complaint and one that shows up. I thought this was better. I think Velvet's style lent her to be able to slow down a little bit more because Velvet is so explosive. So they just seem to have a really good ring chemistry, and it was really refreshing to see her do something with an opponent like this after what we saw with Nyla. Like, I was so burned out on that. So completely different direction. There was a story here. It was a really solid match. And I mean, it's Britt and Britsburg, you know what I mean? So yeah. I don't know if I needed the post-match shenanigans to happen there. I think it would have been cool if the go home shot was her. I didn't even need like the post-match beatdown. I thought the go home shot could have just been her with this insane crowd holding the belts in the air. But I mean, that's picking nits. I'm very excited about Jamie Hayter. I think it was good to clarify that she's still a heel despite being super over in the one city she's going to be super over in probably. So very well done, and a very positive highlight for this women's division, I think, as far as matches that we've seen of recent.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on, you know, Britt looking good in this match and Red Velvet looking real good. I think this was another one of those instances where it's like Red Velvet, yes, we can see she's come along, but this is now like the second time she's been put into some sort of high profile situation where, you know, she's really risen to the occasion, right? Like the first situation, she came in late to the Jade Cargill, Shaquille O'Neal, you know, Cody feud. And she really pulled that off well. And this too, like this was not a long build. This was a really short build. And, you know, they worked together a few times before, but, you know, she's come along here and we've really saw it. So I was really pleased at that. Now, I do have to ask you, Kate, because I think this came up a week or two ago. One of your kind of problems with this was the fact that there wasn't this sort of story built in. It was a very short build and we were nervous about this. It sounds like it won you over. Like they, you know, it turned you in this last, you know, kind of match.
Yeah, I think there was some actual in-ring storytelling, which was great. And then when they gave it a little more context with the stuff with Mark Henry, that made me really happy. I thought we were just going to get that 1 week snap going into it. And then we were just going to hit the match dry. There was a good amount of like appropriate shit talking and justification for the match, I felt like, in those Mark Henry segments. So that was enough for me. And then with that combined with what they delivered in the ring, I felt really excited about.
Well, it was definitely a good episode one of Rampage. We've got this week's episode coming. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But it's going to probably be must-see TV this week again. So stay tuned on Friday night.
Must leave Ring of Honor early TV.
Well, you know, allegedly. Unconfirmed. Anyway, we did talk about Fuego and Jamie Hayter are all elite. So that came out shortly after that episode. And then Saturday we had Triple Mania. And that was a card that did include some AEW talent on it. So I just really kind of want to call it out. Now, I didn't see this whole card, Kate, but I did see the match that most people probably wanted to tune in for. Let's see. I'm just running down. The one thing to note was that there was a title for title match here. It's not necessarily directly AEW, but Deonna Purrazzo took home the AAA title by defeating Fabi Apache. So she's now a double champ. So it's sort of funny that it's like a Kenny Omega situation going on with the women's title in AAA. Their own talent doesn't hold the belt, but pretty cool to show the faith they have in, I guess, Deonna Purrazzo, right? Like, she's one of the top talents out there right now. So good for Deonna.
Kenny even put out like a little bit of a rib of a social media post. I don't know if you saw it, but on Twitter, of Deanna with both of her belts and him only holding his.
Yes, I did.
Triple A belts. And he was like, hey, wait a minute. But Deanna's had a hell of a run. I'm really excited that she is able to flex that around the industry, because she has been fantastic with Impact and the Knockouts. That has been, of any brand that has suffered from not having live crowds, Impact was probably at the top of the list. I initially thought it was going to be NXT, but the silence was so deafening in Impact, and I felt like she did a really good job carrying the belt throughout all of that time. So it's cool to get to see her not only spread her wings into other promotions, but I feel like she's getting the reactions that she deserves. I didn't see the match, but I heard really good things. So good for her. Good for Deanna.
Yeah, I did not, like I said, I didn't see the whole card. I really only saw like one or two things, but I certainly do want to go see that Deanna match. I heard nothing but good things. By the way, Kate, the Yankees are a half a game up in the wild card.
I was watching Dynamite, following Yankee Twitter, so much. Oh, it's such a good day when the Red Sox are, even ever so slightly, but in your rear view. What a great day. We got Dynamite. We got Yankees half a game up. Beautiful.
Usually, just so you know, Kate, like I usually turn the Wi-Fi off on my phone just so I have nothing running, sucking out any bandwidth, because I'm like anal retentive. And that's why this whole time, as you've been talking, I've been going like this, because I'm looking at my I was checking my phone because they almost blew this lead in the ninth inning. Anyway, back to wrestling. We also had a AAA Tag Team Championship. Phoenix and Pentagon did retain their title against Hio Del Vikingo and Laredo Kid and Taurus and Brian Cage. So Brian Cage appeared as well. And I heard that that match was just full of crazy batshit moves. And if you've never seen Taurus, you should certainly look him up, because he looks insane. But again, AEW talent is holding on to their AAA belts.
And like just the character work is insane too, from what I heard. Like I have not watched AAA, but like it's not that far off from Lucha Underground, where people are coming out like in superhero whatever. And I guess Brian Cage was somebody. I don't know who. I'm not gonna pretend I know, but like that's just I compared it to Joshi the other day, of like where it seems like it's a little bit more of a circus than your typical promotion that you can maybe just jump into.
it totally is. Like I stuck around after the Kenny match, and the main event was a hair for hair match. And you know, like I don't know the last time I saw a hair for hair match, but it is if you're not into AAA and you want to give it a try, you can, but you're probably gonna have to give it a few tries. It's a six-sided ring, you know. The costumes and the masks are crazy. You know, I didn't understand anything that was being said because it was all in Spanish. There's no English commentary. So it's certainly like you have to really love it. And I liked what I saw. I don't know if I'd go out of my way all the time to see it. I knew there was the high priority, or the, you know, kind of like the high profile, I should say, match between Kenny Omega and Andrade. So that's what we're going to get to next. The AAA Mega Campeonato match versus Kenny Omega versus Triple A, Jesus, Andrade. And it should be single. That's right. Single A, Andrade.
A ball, baby.
So it should be noted that earlier in the night, Conan approached Andrade about being in his corner. And Andrade declined to offer. He said he had someone more important in mind. And Conan was insulted, so he went over to Omega's locker room, you know, with the proposition that would ensure victory. And Omega said he was all ears. So we get to the match, and Kenny comes out, or I'm sorry, maybe Kenny doesn't come out first. I can't remember the order here, but either way, Conan comes out with Kenny, and Kate, it's 2021. Ric Flair comes out with Andrade. Pop comes out with Andrade in his corner. But it should be noted that Kenny Omega did retain his title. A lot of people thought that Kenny was going to start to unravel and lose his belt right away. Now, the rumor mills have said that, and by rumor mills, I basically mean Dave Meltzer said that the plan was changed multiple times in lead up to the match because Andrade was planned to win at multiple times, but basically it was changed because they didn't want him, AEW didn't want Kenny losing another belt so soon because he just dropped the Impact title. But apparently when the plans were Andrade winning the title, Kenny was on board, especially because Ric Flair was showing up. Like, you know, so I don't know what the future plans are. I think the end of that match seemed a little anticlimactic to me. But still, I mean, we got to see Andrade wrestle again. We haven't gotten to see a lot of Andrade in AEW. I thought he looked good. You know, these guys worked pretty well together. So at some point, if we do get Kenny and Andrade in AEW, then, you know, the masses will get to see it. But it was a pretty interesting match.
I wonder if we're going to get Andrade and Pac It All Out for the title. That could be kind of fun. I actually would have liked it if Kenny lost, but they know smarter than I do. Like, I think it would have been... It makes me a little nervous that now All Out is going to be title for title and that Kenny's going to win the Impact title back. And I don't think that should happen. I feel like giving it to Christian is smart because you can give Impact their title back and not have... Like, Christian can take the loss of the Impact title. Like, he can work a couple of programs and then lose it and not have that feel like so detrimental in any way. Right. And I don't think Kenny Omega should have the Impact title back, especially if we're not going to get him versus Hangman at All Out. Like, I don't think that was going to be like the thread unraveling that maybe we all thought it was. So, but they know better than I do. And I guess Tony Khan is in charge of Kenny's booking when he's on other promotions, but Andrade is also in AEW. So I'm sure they have something smart planned.
Yeah,
both of those guys look weak. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. And I have a feeling that when they do decide to maybe take that title off him, they're going to do it on AEW television, and they're maybe going to get or give AAA that rub. You know what I mean? Like a little bit of that, you know, U.S. audience might be like, I wonder what this AAA is about. You know, and then they'll go check it out.
And I think there was not even like a legal way to stream that AAA pay-per-view in America, right? Like a bunch of people were just seeing it on Twitch watch alongs and stuff. So like he might have also not wanted his champion to lose in such like a closed circuit. But yeah, I think like everything I heard was like, oh, I thought Kenny might lose, but that the match was great. So I will definitely go back and seek it out. I'm just trying to keep up with everything these days, man.
Yes, I cannot confirm nor deny how I may have seen that match live in real time. But I did get to see it live. So I believe what I had read was, and again, I'm not sure of all of it, but there are apparently legal reasons as to why it couldn't be shown in the U.S. in real time. I think I had seen that in two weeks, like after the pay-per-view happened, it will be available in the U.S. So at some point people in the U.S. will be able to see it. I don't know if you'll have to pay for it or what, but listen, people, if you want to see it, you could find it. So, you know, we live in the digital age. You could find anything you need. But yeah, it was, I would definitely say, Kate, to check it out if you have a chance. It's not like go out of your way right now to see it because I don't think they're going to do anything right now, but regardless, I'm kind of, you said you didn't, you know, you didn't really want it title for title. And I thought that that might have been the way they were going to go at All Out, you know, and maybe that Kenny was going to get that Impact title back. I think you're right. He doesn't need it. But now I don't necessarily think that's what they're going to do with it. And I don't really even know why, but I just have a feeling that that's not what they're going to do anymore. And this will just be a straight up AEW title match. There are some Impact spoilers that are out there because it didn't air yet. So if you want to know kind of what happened with Christian and Impact, you can seek those out. We're not going to talk about it here. But you know, there are some things that they're doing with the Impact titles that, you know, when they're kind of lining up what's going to happen, all, you know, the Christian defenses and whatnot. You know, I just don't think it just sounds like they're moving on from Kenny, and that's fine. I think Kenny wants to start to slow down anyway.
Yeah, and this, I think we've talked about it before. This was getting like a little bit stuck in the mud. So you can only hold another promotion's belt hostage for so long before the payoff is just like not there. But yeah, I'm excited for it. I think the history of Christian going over there is so special in itself that like it almost doesn't matter if he drops it super soon, because it's more the value of the moment, which again on Rampage, Jericho did such a good job of explaining. So, but I'm with you. I hope it's not title for title, and it doesn't feel that way based on the things that Christian's been saying about like, I already got one title. I'm in your head. Like, what does Christian gain from putting the Impact title back on the line? Absolutely nothing. So, but he can be in his head for getting a second title off of him.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing too, Kate, is I think this is better because now Impact can also, Impact can also figure out who their guy is going to be, right? And they have it being given from one Impact guy, you know, historically one Impact guy to the next Impact guy. It's a nicer story for them. So, but I'm with you, right? Like where you say your belt can only be held hostage for so long. Well, like you have to figure out who the guy is going to be at some point, yes. Right?
Yeah.
So like, no, absolutely. Let's figure it out. But either way, really fun stuff going on. It's interesting to see all these kind of crossovers. You know, we haven't really had a whole lot of crossover in a while. So it seemed like a weekend full of crossover and a lot of stuff happening before we even got to Dynamite tonight. So that's really where we're at, Kate. We're right up to the point of discussing Dynamite. But before we get there and before we kind of take a small break, was there anything, because we said we weren't going to talk about Dark, but was there anything that you specifically wanted to call out about either Dark Elevation or Dark?
Sure. Just two quick things. Dante Martin is insane, just more insanity from him, which is really great. And Kira Hogan has had two excellent matches to start her. You know, I'm hoping it's going to be an AEW like debut. Hopefully she gets signed because she's had two fantastic matches. So just seeing her work and seeing someone with TV experience on Dark is fun too. She knows where the cameras are. She knows when to showboat. She's like very, very good at feeling like a seasoned talent on a program that is sometimes greener and feels more exhibitional. So I'm just excited to see her on those matches. And I think the two that she's had so far have been great. So hopefully they continue to build out that women's division even more.
Yeah. I thought Kira Hogan had really two really good showings in her matches. And again, I don't think anybody might've necessarily thought that she was going to win those matches, but man, they really allowed her to look strong in those two showings. So yeah, it was awesome. I thought it was awesome seeing Kira Hogan in the AEW ring because she can go. So I'm with you. We'll talk a little bit more about her as we get into Dynamite. The other thing, I agree with Dante Martin too. We don't even need to go out there. Can I just
go watch it? Like there's no words that I have to describe Dante Martin. Just go watch him because he's insane.
He's ridiculous. He's ridiculous. And I can't remember, Kate, because I'm not looking at the rundown. Who did he wrestle? It was oh my gosh.
Oh, Lee Moriarty.
That's it. Yes. That's it.
I can never say his name. And he's phenomenal. I wish they would have actually given him a little bit more time, but I have a feeling we'll be seeing him as a recurring dark talent, possibly, hopefully. He's phenomenal, but yeah, his job was to make Dante look even better, and he did it.
Yeah, for sure. And I honestly just wanted to call out the fact that I thought it was awesome. Like, even Lee Moriarty looked great, right? And he looked great because he helped, you know, Dante look great. You know what I mean? It takes two to tango. So I thought that was a great match to showcase Dante, and Lee definitely helped get him there. That would certainly be a match I would say to check out from the darks this week. Obviously, there's one coming tomorrow. The other thing,
sure. And I'll just put over Lee real quick too. He has a phenomenal match floating around there with Jonathan Gresham on the indie circuit. If you haven't seen it and you want to find out more about who Lee is, very, very good match. I watched it for the first time yesterday. It's fantastic. You can get a real flavor of who he is.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I think we'll be seeing more of him. I think it's only a matter of time. The other thing that I want to, this is the only thing beyond what we've already talked about that I want to call out about the darks. Hands down, without a shadow of a doubt, the best indie name ever is Masha Slamovich.
It's fantastic, right?
She's best great, ever,
by the way.
She's oh no,
fantastic. Yeah,
she but is
the best name in the best history name. Of names.
It's over. Everybody should just stop. That's
pack
it.
It up. Go home. I also, because I'm in Eddie Kingston, Mark, I can't believe I forgot this. Eddie Kingston on commentary, selling that pyro was giving him PTSD because of
yes,
the exploding barbed wire death match. Being mad that the people in the back didn't warn him there was going to be pyro. Oh my God. I'm an even bigger Mark than I was the week before. I didn't think it was possible, but you got Malachi Black selling that his eye is getting more and more dead by the week. And you've got Eddie Kingston selling that this Spartan Church explosion that he passed out from is still traumatizing him all these months later. God bless you, dude. I love it.
Yeah, it was so funny. And even when he came in, I guess like Paul White shoved his chair out of the way and he was so flustered. It was funny. So yeah, and listen, if you want to get any commentary on the darks, go back through our Twitter feed, because yeah. Schlong was pretty much going, he was live, with the darks tweeting along. So, all our commentary was there. And as I said before, we're not covering dark at length this week. We're going to see how we cover dark moving forward. We may be moving it to our social platform. So give us a follow. We'll keep you guys posted on what we're doing. We watch dark every week. So we're definitely out there talking about it. If you have anything you want us to talk about, hit us up on social, send us your questions, ask us what we think, whatever. But Kate, I want to take a moment. I think we should take a little break here. Let's pause for a second, gather our thoughts on Dynamite tonight. And then we'll be able to kind of go through that at length. So let's take a short break and hear some words from some of the other fine programming on the Shining Wizards Network that we are also part of. And we're so happy to be part of. So check out some of these other great shows.
Everyone knows a lot of things can change in the span of 10 years, but when it comes to professional wrestling podcasting, one thing is still guaranteed. The Shining Wizards is the only place to get all the latest wrestling news, interviews with the greatest guests, and of course, tons of laughs in discussing the world of wrestling. The show is still available on Monday nights at 7 p.m. East on rantdmradio.com and Rant Entertainment Media on the TuneIn app, and it's still available on all podcasting platforms. To check us out, head over to ShiningWizards.com, where it's still wrestling talk and talk about wrestling.
Because of the obvious threat to untold numbers of citizens, and because of the crisis which is even now developing, this radio station will remain on the air day and night. This station and hundreds of other radio and TV stations throughout this part of the country are pooling their resources through an emergency network hookup to keep you informed of all developments.
Horns up, everyone. When on the Shining Wizards Network, be sure every Friday to check out Radioactive Metal. Radioactive Metal is one of the longest-running podcasts on the interweb, and every week we bring you a fist full of metal, including interviews with all your favorite artists, discuss all the metal news, and feature the best tunes on the air today. So grab a Lemmy, join your cool Uncle Snowy, and co-host Aaron in the pit.
your recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting from the current to the way back. Join the impact player Phil Rea and the Portuguese man of war Choppy for the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, live every week on rantemradio.com. Get all our episodes over at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Google Play, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, and TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com.
Are you tired of being told what to think and believe by Hollywood elites and politicians who just don't care about you?
Tired of not getting the truth when you watch the news?
Tired of trying to figure out what pronoun to use?
Tired of mob mentality when all you want to do is think for yourself and make up your own mind?
That's where we come in. This is Justin.
And Vince.
Your host of Inconclusive Breakdown.
We are a weekly anti-PC podcast bringing you entertainment and current event news without any spin.
If you want to truly stay informed on what's going on in the world, then give us a listen every Sunday, anywhere you get podcasts, at least till Zuckerberg and Twitter Jack deplatform us.
And as always, we're proud members of the Shining Wizards Network.
Tired of the PC police telling you what you can and cannot say? Want a show that travels back to the 80s and 90s, where the badass hosts have beaten down cancel culture on three separate occasions and carried on to gloat about it? Since 2013, The Midnight Journey is that show. Travel back to the malls and arcades, pop in your VHS, and join us where the 80s and 90s return from the dead. Conan, tell them where to find us.
WLWstudios.com, home of the Midnight Jury podcast, hosted by Midnight Mike and Calvin Brody.
Also available on all major podcast platforms via the Shining Wizards Network, and join in the conversation on Twitter at Midnight Jury.
What's up, wrestling fans? You want something awesome? Check out Wrestling Night in Canada here on the Shining Wizards Network. We're three Canadian metalheads uniting for the love of pro wrestling. Every episode we go over all the latest news and special events with the odd unique interview as well. So grab a cold one and check out Wrestling Night in Canada, eh?
And we're back.
Oh, I feel so refreshed.
So do I. That was a nice little break we took.
Before we swing into Dynamite, I do just want to put over not only the Shining Wizards Network, but the Shining Wizards Monday night show has Mickey James on Monday.
Yes.
So just a huge noteworthy guest talking NWA Empower.
Oh my goodness.
So we bust their balls a lot, but that is going to be a fantastic interview. They just had an interview. I sat in with it. I don't know why I said they. That show had an interview with Adam Baum, who was a great guest, really insightful guy, still out there hustling, by the way, good for him. Yeah. But be sure to tune in Monday to that Mickey James interview, because that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, if you don't check out the Shining Wizards wrestling podcast, they're pretty great. They cover everything. You know, we are obviously AEW focused, but they cover everything: the E, Ring of Honor, Impact, New Japan, AEW, you know, much shorter than we do. MLW, pretty much everything going on in the wrestling landscape. So that's Monday nights at 7 p.m. You can watch on Facebook, or you can listen on rantemradio.com, and, you know, find them on all other sorts of podcast platforms out there. So definitely check that out. All right, Kate. So let's get into Dynamite tonight, because it was a 5-match card, and when I first kind of saw the match card, I was like, man, there's not a whole lot here. Like, this probably is going to seem like it's going to drag. I swear to God, I looked at the clock and I was like, holy shit, it's 9:30.
Like, oh my God. As soon as the main event, I was like, oh, I thought this was main. Oh my God, it's the main event time already. I was like so confused that Jericho and MJF were on my screen. I was like, I thought this was closing the show. And I looked up and it was 9:42. I was like, yeah. How does this happen week after week? So yeah. Exciting.
It really did. I wish I was joking. It seriously shocked me how quick this show went. And I seriously, today when I was looking at the match card, I was like, man, kind of skimping. There's going to be a lot of filler here. Not a whole lot of filler.
No.
I mean, there were obviously segments. We'll talk about it. But anyway, you know, the show opens up and Moxley and Eddie Kingston are making their way to the ring, which I thought was a little odd. And then it all made sense. 2.0 and Daniel Garcia jump them as they're coming through the crowd. And then we get our heel group entering the ring. Matt Lee tells the crowd that they look, you know, they took out the heroes and now they got nothing. And if you want a taste, they'll give it to you. So bring down the referee. And that's when Sting makes his entrance. I'm sorry, I don't do the Sting thing, but
it's Sting.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you. It's not, we're not, and I want to be very clear because I know Matt's going to listen to this. We're not stealing a gimmick. We're just trying to be consistent.
There it is.
Schlong was doing it. Schlong did it a couple times, I think.
We just got to be consistent.
That's right.
But I'm still here, motherfuckers.
So now we're down to double A baseball. We're calling up guys who shouldn't even be there.
People who didn't even watch Sting as a kid. Womp womp.
Oh my god. So we get Sting and coming into the ring, and then Darby Allin's music hits, but he's nowhere to be found, and all of a sudden, oh, he's behind 2.0 with the skateboard and makes the attack. So it should be noted, because I didn't say it, this is a tornado tag team match. Now, to be honest, I don't necessarily remember what a tornado tag team match is. I, for some reason, thought that it was just like you can jump in and out whenever you want, but I forgot. I guess apparently this is anything goes anywhere, falls count anywhere. Who the hell knows? Because they wrestled all over the fucking place. So I didn't necessarily have an issue with anything here. One of the most insane things that happened was certainly the body slam that Darby Allin took on the skateboard that was wheels up. That did not look like it felt good. I just don't know why you do that. I mean, I know why you do it, but I don't know why you do that, Kate.
How do you find out you have the tolerance? Dude, I stub my toe and I'm like upset the rest of the day.
Yeah.
What was that? And how do you find out you can take that bump? I don't even want to know. Sting looked great, by the way. Just want to throw that out there.
Yes, he did. He
looked fantastic.
Well, hold on, Kate, because there were a couple more things I want to call out. I just want to make sure I get to some of the things to call out. There was
I'll just jump in and say that I didn't remember what a Texas tornado, or this wasn't a Texas one, was it? I don't know if it's a Texas one.
Yes, it was. Yes.
Because we're in Texas, I guess that's the only difference.
Yes.
I do know Old Man Tony on the Monday Night Show has said that they should do this with more tag matches in general, because especially with Knox, which that we'll get into later too. But like in general, they play fast and loose with tag team matches when they're like these mega, usually when it's like 6-man, 8-man, 10, 12-man tag matches. He's like, just call it a tornado match and then you don't have to worry. And then I'm not distracted by the bad refereeing, because if it's an anything goes anywhere match, that's my new expectation, right? So you're not constantly annoyed at the refs for that. So I will say it was cool to see them do that. And maybe they should utilize that more when you have like these 10 to 12 man matches. Like in those scenarios, that could be something that's really helpful too. And like a good piece of psychology, as much as we pick on Old Man Tony for being an old man. Old man who yells like clouds.
He's so old. He's just so old.
So old.
Daniel Garcia was also involved in this match a little bit. And I'm going like out of order with stuff. So my apologies, go watch the match, but I'm going out of order with some stuff here, but Daniel Garcia was involved, and then Eddie Kingston takes him out. So now he's out of this match. He was just there to play spoiler anyway. At one point, Darby Allin does take a flapjack into an overhang, you know, like from, so they were on floor level, right, kind of in the crowd, and they went, you know, kind of under the entrance you would make to the floor, and there was the overhang from the stand. So they decided to flapjack Darby into it. Jesus, Darby, what the fuck?
And a fun, I don't think I remember a time where I've seen a spot like that.
Right.
It's probably somewhere in like ECW or something, but like I certainly can't remember it in AEW canon and really in wrestling in general. So that was just like a fun use of space too. That was really smart.
Absolutely. No, I liked it. I didn't hate it. I'm just saying.
But Jesus, Darby.
Come on, Darby. Also, we get a table put in the ring at one point, and Jesus Christ, Sting is, I think, in his late. I don't want to get this wrong.
62, I think.
Yes, I was going to say, I believe now, for some reason, I wanted to say 68, but I believe you're right, 62. Sting is 62, and he gets double powerbombed through a table live on television. My favorite part is that he just no-sells the fuck out of it.
I saw Tony Deppen retweet or tweet that, and he was just like, I don't want to hear about anybody complaining about us young kids no-selling if Sting is 62 and no-selling going through a table. Sting, the wrestler, is 62. Sting, the musical artist, 69.
Nice. Oh, noise. So yeah, Sting gets put through a table with a power bomb, you know, double scorpion death drop. And then he stacks them up and double scorpion deathlock for the win. Both of Team 2.0 tap out. And Kate, I'll get your take on the full match now that we got through some of those large spots. I thought this was just fun.
Super fun opener. Like, what a blast to do a tornado style match and to have these guys in it. I was impressed by how much heat the heels already had here, considering how new they are, and like, they're kind of silly other than Daniel Garcia, right? Like, that's my favorite thing, is this juxtaposition between Rise, Ever Rise, or whatever we're calling them, and Daniel Garcia. Like, they don't totally make sense, but then they totally make sense in another way. So mm-hmm. I was just impressed by how new they are to the programming and the crowd reactions that they've gotten. But I guess I should stop being surprised, because apparently every single one of these crowds is going to be hot as hell. It's crazy. Seriously, the reactions we're getting. But for a newer team that's not super established, the crowd really, really bought right into everything. So, and it was also just fun to see with Sting, like, that in their debut match, they were like, is it really you? Is it really Sting? And then they're out there like, there's a table spot and they're getting double scorpion deathlocked. Like, what a fun moment that must have been for them in real life. Like, that must have been great.
So much fun. And I guess, like, just thinking about it, Kate, like, I guess, how do you build heat that quickly? Like, you go against one of the most iconic people in the company, you just automatically run at Sting, right? So I guess that's helping them. But the other thing too, I want to bring up, cause, I think we were, we mentioned it last week, was, and I think even the week before, we were like, I don't know what the status is on 2.0. Like, they kind of made it seem like they're signed, but they're not, they didn't say they're all elite. I think I read something that said, on one of the episodes of Jericho's podcast, I don't know if he was talking with them or maybe just talking about something in general. I think he kind of dropped the fact that they're signed, like, officially signed.
Okay.
Which I don't have a problem with. Listen, these, they can work, and if they're just going to be this type of goofy heel, I'm with it, because they don't really have anything like that except the Stooges and, you know, in the Elite right now.
And the Wingmen a little bit are in that goofy area, but they're like a more specific carved out type of goofy. And I hope Daniel Garcia signed. I think he's something very different than they have right now. And he's so young. I just think the sky's the limit for him. He's such a, he almost has more of like an ROH feel to me or something, like a little bit more pure of a wrestler, a little bit more of a mat technician. I think that he would be a great addition to, if they're going to do a trios thing. There's not a lot like in the tag team division and the trios that would be building out that fit what he does, and to see him break out as a single star on his own too, I think could be great. So I'm for all three of them getting signed if that's the direction they have A, already gone in and just have it announced, or B, are headed in.
Yeah, I don't recall seeing anything through what I read in that about Daniel Garcia, but I would bet if they signed 2.0, like Jericho kind of alluded that they did, or sort of dropped, I bet Daniel Garcia signed. I mean, you don't, you know, I think you hang on to him. Anyway, let's go back. Let's move on with the show so we can get through this. We get some footage of Sammy Guevara earlier in the day. I guess his major announcement was him proposing to his girlfriend, Pam, in the ring earlier in the night, and she said yes. So congratulations to Sammy and future Mrs. Guevara. Well, maybe, you know, that's assuming. I shouldn't do that. Maybe she's not going to take his name. So congratulations, Sammy and Pam.
They've been together forever, too, which is really sweet. Like, since high school, I think, before he was even wrestling. So that's
Kate,
cute.
Kate, Sammy and Pammy.
Sammy and Pammy, stop it.
We should be invited.
For the ages.
We should be invited to the wedding now.
We should be invited to the wedding.
My goodness. So they show that, and then they cut to Shawn Spears and Tully basically mocking the engagement announcement. But they have a gift for Pam. They're going to make her an honorary member of the Pinnacle for one night only, and he'll let her be on top. Whoa!
Hey-oh.
So clearly we know there's going to be some heat right off the bat in this match. So we do go to break, but when they come back, we're going straight into Sammy Guevara versus Shawn Spears. And Spears does try to attack Sammy before the bell, but Sammy kind of saw him coming. So they battle all on the ramp, on the outside of the ring, in front of Pammy. Tully actually gets involved, you know, with the assisted pile driver on the outside of the ring. And then finally, Sammy gets put in the ring. Spears gets in, and they ring that bell. So again, Kate, I'm only mentioning this here because we can talk about it when we get into the Knox stuff later, but we're seeing a lot of fucking latitude from the referee, like, by even starting this match, because Sammy was pretty much knocked out.
Yeah, and I whined about this on Friday a little bit too, that, like, latitude is great, but you don't have a baseline for that latitude to build off of. Like, it's not latitude anymore. It's just chaos and not having rules, and it's one of the more consistent complaints that I have about AEW outside of the women's division. And we've stopped. I feel like the gang wars have kind of halted a little bit, but that was a little overkill. Now that they're back on the road, it seems to have died down. But the refereeing here, I'm with you. I get why it happened here, but it's like, there's a point where it's just egregious that you would start a match here, right? Like, that's just ridiculous.
pretty insane. But eventually we do get this match going. Sammy does crawl, you know, once the bell rings, he rolls out of the ring, and then Spears tries to go for another one of those assisted pile drivers, but Aubrey actually throws Tully out. So I guess she's now doing what a referee should do, right? So let's give her a check in the right column there.
I think that also frustrated me because it wasn't Knox, and Aubrey is usually, like, I feel like, the most no-nonsense of the referees. So then to see her not even giving a fuck, I'm like, well, what are we doing? Like, the one right. who, like, actually does dig in and enforce rules is now just throwing it out the window. Like, come on, man.
Right. No, I agree with you there. It seemed a little odd. You know, the other thing, too, is that as we're getting this match going, there's a couple moments where Sammy is going for offense and just completely whiffs, you know, and Spears is able to get the upper hand. No, it's just a little surprising. You know what I mean? Like, you never see that happen to Sammy, right? And it's happening now with Spears. So just kind of something a little different they're doing, but they're building the, you know, drama here. We could spring forward or push it forward a little bit. Eventually, we do see we get an avalanche C4, but it doesn't put Sammy down. They are on the apron fighting, and eventually they set up a guardrail between the ring and the crowd guardrail, and Sammy does eventually Death Valley driver Spears onto the guardrail. Again, that's a lot of latitude, Kate, for Ref Aubrey.
Sure is.
This is not a, and it should be said, this is a standard one-on-one match. Nothing out of the ordinary.
No DQ stuff about it. Like,
that's right.
Straight up rules.
Lot of latitude. But eventually we do get the 630 senton, which is just a ridiculous move. My God, it looks crazy. I don't know how you give or take that move because it just looks like it hurts, but that won't even put Spears down. And eventually, Guevara takes down his knee pad. He hits Spears with three bare knees, to which Spears is now bleeding. And we get the go to hell, the GTH. Sammy wins by pinfall.
We're going to get the go to hell versus the go to sleep someday, and I'm going to be so excited.
It's unconfirmed and alleged. Stop.
We're going to allegedly someday, hypothetically, supposedly, maybe, get the go to hell versus the go to sleep.
Hypothetically, we could already get that. The forbidden door is open.
That is true. There are people who do that move better. I have a question for you, unless yes. You're still... is that where we're ending the match discussion?
I mean, there's really... he goes and smooches Pammy after the match, and I just want to call that. I think I'd have to go back and watch. I think she kisses him and then kind of looks at him, and I think she says something like, is that... like, she looked really nervous about the blood, and I think he said, it's not mine.
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna go back and look for that.
Look, I'll have to go back and watch, but he goes over to her, and you know, they kiss, and then like as he pulls away, she looks sort of like, oh my god, like, are you hurt? She might have even said like, are you hurt? And I think he said, it's not mine.
That's so funny. Wrestling wives and girlfriends go through more than, and now fiancés, I should say, go through more than we probably give credit for. That's a very sweet moment. I'm actually gonna go seek that out because that's cute. I really liked this match. I thought Sammy and Spears have such good chemistry. I was really, really blown away by it. Good collision of ring styles too, because Sammy, while more acrobatic, is also very hard hitting. Like, he can lay a shit in, and oh man, does Spears ever too. So I really liked everything about this match. The only thing that I want to throw to you, and this is just a kind of a general question, because I've complained about this with the Crossroads, I think they go to the well too many times. I'm like, it took 3 times for them to kick out of the Crossroads. Like, it kind of makes it look weak. I saw some people saying, and I don't think I agree because I actually liked the ending of this, but should that 6:30 have ended the match in your mind?
You know, it's a really good question, because I thought the 6:30 was his signature finisher. But I guess not. I guess maybe it's the GTH. Maybe he didn't. Did he hit that 6:30 to win the cell match? The blood and gut?
Blood and guts match. I can't remember off the top of my head. People in the Facebook chat.
Or not blood and guts. There was something. Didn't they lose blood and guts? I thought there was something.
Stadium Stampede was, I think, what you're actually looking for, the moment that they came back down to the ring.
Yes, I think that might be it. But I thought maybe he hit it for the win there. But maybe the argument there is that Spears had already been through like so much other shit that it wins it. I just don't know. That move looks so cool to have somebody kick out of it does suck. But if the GTH, is his finisher and that doesn't get kicked out of, then I guess that's fine. Like, but it did seem almost anticlimactic. Like that 6:30 is just so killer looking. Nobody should kick out of that, in my opinion.
Joe Evans said that he used that to win Stadium Stampede, and that he votes yes. After the 6:30, it feels like that the match should have been finished. Joe is always awesome and supportive of us, and we thank you for that, because he's also supportive in the most fun ways, which are enabling my puns.
No.
And sending incredible gifts. And just being fantastic in general. So thank you, Joe. And also thank you for being our little research intern in that moment. We appreciate you.
Yeah, we do love gifts. So I use them a lot tonight in the Discord. Joe, thanks for supporting. Joe is up, by the way. Kate, get out your list. Joe, sticker list. Sticker. Joe.
Yes. I feel like we should give him a number too.
Well, you know what? That's something else we're gonna work on, and maybe we do that and we'll figure out a way to incorporate numbers and stickers. We'll figure it out. We actually had some ideas running around for that offline. We're not gonna spill any of the tea here. But we had a couple ideas for the numbers. I think we need to pick that back up again.
And you can help us do numbers by following us at Mark Arter Pod and giving us a like on Facebook at facebook.com/MarkArterPod.
That's right.
Is Mark Arter Pod or Mark Arter Podcast? I just plugged us and I don't know.
You're right. It's slash Mark Arter Pod. We kept it consistent.
I thought we did.
Yeah, we keep it consistent. And actually, if you're listening to this in podcast form, I don't mean to pull us totally away from Dynamite, but if you're listening to us in podcast form, you can watch us on Facebook Live or after the fact. You can also watch us. You know, the videos stay on Facebook, so you can certainly check us out on Facebook if you want to see the craziness that is us doing this on Zoom right now.
I look like a crazed librarian this week. So if you want to see my insane top knot and glasses,
you know what though? I have to tell you this, Kate. You finally given me what I've been asking for. You've given me the same respect as you do all of your other people. Thank you. And you're finally in front of the picture wall for this show.
This isn't like even the permanent setup, but it's a better setup than the one I had. So you get, and you're a Yankee fan. So if anybody deserves it,
I appreciate it.
Cincinnati Reds fan, Sean Ross Sapp. It's you with my Yankee blueprint of the old stadium.
I mean, to be honest, who the fuck would be a Cincinnati Red fan to begin with? What the hell is wrong with you?
Masochist and a Bengals fan. They got it rough over there.
Oh, my God. Anyway, so to answer your question, like, I can kind of go either tonight's match, for the purpose of tonight's match, that 6:30 I think should have ended it. If the 6:30 is not going to be his permanent finisher and we only see it every now and again, like, then I don't have a problem with people kicking out of it, but you have to be consistent. You know what I mean? Like, that's my only thing. They've been good being consistent with it, right? Like, you know, their finishers are pretty well protected, right? Like, you know, generally when people hit their finisher, nobody gets out of it. Same thing with like Jungle Boy and the snap, the snare trap. Sorry, I was going to say it all backwards.
With the snare trap effect, Pack Mass with Malakai Black is going to be protected to the end of time. Does it bug you with the Crossroads, or because that's not such an impactful finisher to start with, does it not bug you?
You know, I don't even know if they necessarily like established his signature finisher, right? Like,
that's fair.
I guess like it could be the Crossroads, but he's also won a bunch of matches by submission, right? Like, hasn't he won with the figure four?
Yeah, that's true. He kind of has like signature moves. Yeah, I guess he doesn't have a go-to finisher, I guess, is the best way to put that. That's a good point. But
they just haven't really established it, which is kind of weird now thinking about it, right? Like, he's such a big name, like, they haven't really established it. But also, I guess maybe that's sort of a good thing, right? Like, we haven't seen him enough. Like, we haven't seen him so much that, like, you know, this isn't even a discussion. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, listen, either way, I thought this match was fun. I think it should have ended with the 6:30, but it was a brutal finish. And I guess he got that retribution for the shit that was talked about as his fiance. So I was okay with it. Now a question I have for you, Kate, is because we're sitting there watching this and Mrs. Money is basically, you know, like, that's adorable. Her question was, A, is this fake? And I was like, no, there's no way this is fake. I was like, you don't ask your real girlfriend on TV if she wants to get married and then she's not part of it and you don't get married. Like, that, no.
That would be bad.
But the question, I guess, and she had said it, so the question I had for you is, like, if your significant other is in the business, would you want to be pulled into it in this way? So let me be clear. So I'm not saying like Pammy is going to be a permanent fixture on TV. She was just for tonight part of the story, right? I don't think she's going to become part of the story, but would you in any way want to be pulled into this in any fashion? You're shaking your head.
No. I think public proposals are cheesy. I do. If someone warned me about it, like if they wanted to do it and they had like already actually proposed, I think I would play ball as far as like for pretend for like the fake moment. Like that John Cena Nikki Bella thing was fake as fuck. Well,
yeah. but I want to be clear. I'm not even talking about like the proposal part, right? I'm actually talking just more so about the part of like, okay, so you're the significant other who's not part of the business, and now you're kind of like being pulled into the business for a night. Like, would you have a problem being part of the quote unquote spotlight? Like, no. Gina was like, I'd want no part of this.
I wouldn't have a problem with that. I'm like, not even from like a me perspective. I'm just such a kayfabe dork that I'm like, if there was no chance they were ever going to be romantically involved with anyone ever in a storyline, then I would be fine with it. But because I'm a dork about kayfabe, like if it, say I had the wonderful pleasure of real life dating Orange Cassidy, and then like they do a love angle with Chris Statlander, but it's like out there that I'm dating Orange Cassidy in real life, like that stuff would bug me, but it's not like from like a public, being in public or being involved in wrestling aspect. It's more just like it's respect for this business, for this great sport. Like I would never want to blow the doors off of it in that way, but I don't think I would ever date a wrestler because they're all weird and unseasonably tan for three quarters of the year, but
so unseasonably tan and usually poorly tanned.
Yeah, usually bad. I mean, look at MJF tonight. Oh, buddy. Bad. He looked like he had jaundice on half of his body, not the other half. But I will say, I would have a problem with it if they were going to respect the fact that that can never happen in the storyline, because I like kayfabe too much.
Okay, so...
Would you, if you were dating Abaddon, probably... Right.
Mm-hmm,
and
sure.
She was like, I want to have a zombie wedding on wrestling television to you. Would you go along with it?
Yeah. I so for me, like, I wouldn't really care. Like, it for me, it's almost like, well, it's your thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
if I need to do it to help you, and also I just don't necessarily care what people think. So, like, if people came up to me and, like, oh, aren't you that? I'd be like, yeah, so what? Like, whatever.
So?
yeah, I would. But, Kate, I actually, before we move on, I just need to clarify something. You did say if I were dating Orange Cassidy, is this the first time we're hearing about some love you have for Orange, some feelings for Orange Cassidy? Because we knew about Colt. We knew about Eddie. We know about
you know, I would fuck Peter Avalon.
There you go. This is the first time I've ever heard you mention Orange Cassidy, so I'm a little shocked.
I just picked him because I feel like him and Chris Statlander should have a romantic angle. I do love him. I'm not romantically as in love with him. Like, if you put him on Fuck, Marry, Kill with Peter Avalon and Eddie Kingston to kill him, sadly. So it's not like it is for like Colt or whatever. I just used him as an example because I feel like of anybody on AEW television, like dating angle wise, it needs to be him and the alien, right?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I was just shocked. I was like, oh my God, Kate loves Orange Cassidy. We never knew.
My stable of, what did we say? Brother husbands.
Yes. Brother husbands. You got to be sister wives.
And you got brother husbands.
Brother husbands. All right, let's get back on track. So we go backstage, and Christian Cage is being interviewed with his Impact World Championships, and Don Callis interrupts and takes credit for breaking Christian into the business. But he's happy he's getting an opportunity at All Out, and he'll take that one winged angel. But it's going to be that 5-star match that Christian's been waiting for. Nothing's changed. Don is still on top of the business, and Christian's still having matches and clawing his way to the top. And then Christian says that Callis thinks that he's in Christian's head, but the fact is Christian is deep in Kenny Omega's head. And he knows that he's going to take the thing he prizes the most, that AEW World Championship. Yeah, things might never change. Don thinks that he's the smartest guy in the room, but he is and always has been a corny piece of shit. And then we get a break. So, Kate, what did you think about this Christian interview? The first, well, we had a post, you know, match thing with him last week, but now, you know, the real kind of post-match interview. Did you like this?
I am all for any face calling a heel carny piece of shit. I just pop for a carny piece of shit anytime. So I like this. It was simple and effective. I also liked Callis saying that he hadn't seen him since he gave him an opportunity and made his career, basically. I thought that was a fun piece of real life that they wove into it, which Callis has been great at in this entire run. This was short. It was effective. It pushed the narrative that Christian is the one that's in charge of this now. It makes Kenny Omega losing feel impactful, as it should. Like, it, Christian continuing to drive that home makes the loss feel more significant and like it's going to build up to their next match, which is exactly what it should be. So simple and effective. I liked it. What did you think?
I did like it as well. And I specifically like the fact that it's Don Callis doing the dirty work for Kenny, right? Maybe, you know, and I'm, you know, totally reading into this, but, you know, maybe it's Kenny not being so sure of himself, right? And he's not going to kind of face Christian after just having lost to him. So Don's going to try to, you know, do the work and get in Christian's head. Obviously, it's not necessarily working. So I think we're going to see this continue to escalate. But I'm with you. Like, I thought this worked. I think Don Callis has been great in his AEW run. And I think that, you know, Christian so far, as the guy in Impact and building to this next match, is going fine. So I liked it. I liked it. Nothing else to say there. We come back from commercial. We get a recap from Dante Martin's performance in the six-man tag match last week. And then it's interlaced with kind of promos from him talking about taking Kenny Omega to his limit. So kind of interesting here, Kate, that we have Dante Martin kind of firing shots at Kenny Omega. To me, it just shows you that at some point in the lead up to All Out, we're going to get, you know, Kenny Omega and Dante Martin 1 week here on TV, I think, sort of just as kind of a lead up match. And you know what? I'm cool with that. And to be honest, for me, it kind of shows you the stock that they take in Dante Martin, right? You don't, I think, do something with a guy that's pre-taped where he's basically talking about taking the champ to his limit if you don't feel that he's your future. So I think it was awesome.
Yeah, and that match is going to be insane. Yeah. That's going to be a classic. It's been really very... I guess it's kind of inspiring, to be honest, like seeing this Kenny Omega run, to see him go from Andrade and Rich Swann and Moose and Dante Martin and Jungle Boy and just continue to deliver and deliver and deliver. Like, he is just one of the best to be doing it right now and to ever do it. Like, the amount of people that he just continues to give great matches to of any experience level and any ring style is just pretty, pretty mind blowing.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's going to be crazy when Kenny finally does step away for a period of time and you kind of look back at what Kenny did and where he started in AEW, right? Like, just think about that even now. Like, when he started his run in AEW, he was losing consistently. And now they've built him up into this monster. And even
the monster at that.
Oh my god. And but even looking back at those matches that he was losing early on, I mean, he was helping everybody look good, and he's still doing that. It's gonna be crazy when he does, like I said, take that time to step away, because I think it's gonna show you how much he was doing for other guys.
There will be a void. They'll fill it, sure. But there's gonna be a void.
For sure. And I think that when you look at guys, and we've talked about this before, so we won't go deep, but when you look at guys like Jungle Boy, MJF, Dante Martin,
Ricky Starks,
these are the guys who are going to fill that void, right? These are going to be the guys who then give the guys the matches to look good. So I think they're just doing this in the right way. They're definitely cultivating talent. They're pulling in talent from other places. I mean, who wouldn't with some of the talent that's sitting out there, right? Like, not everybody's going to be homegrown, but I think they're doing this really smart right now. Let's hope that they don't do some sort of weird talent cut and then do pre-taped developmental shows at some point in the future. Hopefully we're way off. All right. We have to talk about what I feel is the low point of the night here, Kate. We go from that video package to Dan Lambert in the ring with Tony Schiavone. Dan Lambert is in the ring, and he says basically he never thought he'd see America go from embracing free speech and debate to having the rich and powerful silence the critics. And AEW has jumped aboard cancel culture train and sent Lance Archer out to punch a 52-year-old man in the face because he was hurting your feelings. He goes on to say all sorts of other shit like that. It should be said that, you know, he's got Junior Dos Santos and Andre Orlovsky with him in the ring. And he basically calls out anybody in the back. He said, if you're feeling froggy, come out and jump. He doesn't think anybody's going to take him up on it. He was going to finish what he was trying to say a couple weeks ago. And he basically starts to run down AEW and the fans, saying they're not there because they're hardcore. The fans are there because they're hard up. And then Lance Archer comes down to attack Lambert, but the Men of the Year show up and beat him down. So Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page come out. And that is the end of that segment. So, Kate, I don't know what the fuck is going on with Dan Lambert, but I don't want to see fucking Dan Lambert again. I really don't understand this. This is the second time. And, like, he's talking about cancel culture and, like, freedom of speech. And I'm like, oh my God, are they going with some ultra right wing thing? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know where this is going. And then he calls people out and he's basically calling these fucking wrestling fans like fat losers who live in their mom's basement. And then, like, Lance gets jumped by Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. Like, I don't know, Kate. You got to take it, because I don't even know what I want to say. Like, it's just, I don't get it.
There's kind of two pieces to this, right? There's the content of what Dan Lambert said, and then there's how it's functioning in the landscape right now. I don't love this promo. It's not the worst promo I ever heard, and it did the job of making me hate him a little bit, right? Like, he's not actually the worst on the mic. I just don't have any idea why it's happening. B, understand why this is what you're doing with Lance Archer right now. He's one of the few guys that I'm like, they gotta figure out where to put him. Like, they need to put him in a crystal clear storyline with things that make sense, because he is phenomenally skilled. And when you build someone up to be a fucking murder hawk, you might want to do something cool with them. But the biggest thing to me was, didn't love the promo, but I get it. And he didn't deliver it all that bad. The biggest thing to me that was the biggest misfire in all of this was Men of the Year, both Scorpio Sky and especially Ethan Page, do not need someone else to talk on their behalf or get involved in a storyline with them in any way, shape, or form at all. If this had just been a segment without Dan Lambert and Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky confronting Lance Archer, I would have been over the fucking moon with this. I would have loved it, because you know Ethan Page has the teeth to dig into Lance Archer in the way that he needs to. He can talk about how he's had more iconic matches and he got here after the Murder Hawk or whatever he wants to do. You know, like, he was fighting Sting and he'll take out Jake the Snake if he needs to, whatever. Like, Ethan Page is going to find it and he's going to do it better than Dan Lambert ever could. And it's going to just be a way cleaner and simpler story to tell. But, like, the booking with Lance has been off for a little bit now. And I think Rampage could open up a really nice spot for him. Like, I think he could really be a fixture there for, like, this late night murder hawk dude. Like, that just seems to make sense. It's called Rampage. Whenever he enters the ring, he just throws a random guy. Like, that fits to me. So I hope they put him in. I would love a feud with him in Men of the Year. That sounds awesome. Why the fuck Dan Lambert is involved in it makes no sense. And why Dan Lambert is there? Like, he's executed the part of shitting on everybody else, all right, I guess. But, like, why are you here? Like, what are you? What are you now? Did you hire Men of the Year? Are you sticking around? Like, I didn't really care about the MMA talent that was in the ring all that much. Like, it just
right.
It just got very convoluted to be not that great. And I'm with you. To me, this was the lowest point of the episode.
You know, and I should have maybe mentioned this before. I totally forgot because I didn't watch it. New Japan ran their show Saturday night. It was what was it? Resurgence.
Yes.
Resurgence ran Saturday night. So it should be noted that Lance Archer did his U.S. United States Championship, the IWGP U.S. Heavyweight Championship. His second reign was very short. Because Hiroshi Tanahashi took that belt off him. Listen, I think we knew that was going to be a transition, right? So not a big deal there, but it almost, I bring it up, Kate, because I'm sort of with you where I think they kind of had something figured out, like, okay, they gave Lance that belt, right? And even though it's not their belt, it's a big moment on television and it makes him feel important. And now all of a sudden he doesn't have that belt. And of course they don't mention it, but he doesn't have that belt. So there's nothing for him to be involved with necessarily around that belt on AEW television, like Moxley had, right? Like, yeah. Moxley had multiple defenses and now he's just being kind of thrown into this situation where I don't even know what the issue is with Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. I think there was a prior issue, but I don't even remember what that issue was, to be honest. It's just, yeah, I don't understand. I'm just kind of like,
it's very muddy. And so they've gone so far out of their way to include it in the action of what's going on. So, I mean, I'm not a triple threat gal, but I would much rather just see Lance Archer and Tanahashi and John Moxley in a triple threat for that belt at All Out than I would like a Dan Lambert, Lance Archer storyline. Right. If he goes away and we just get Men of the Year and Lance Archer all day, I would love that. But this is just like so far out of the way. I think they were trying to think like, hey, real fighting talent makes everything feel big, but this has just been weird and superfluous.
I mean, listen, I get Junior Dos Santos, right? It was Junior Dos Santos. Yeah, Junior Dos Santos. I get him. Like, that's a name that I guess carries some weight. But honestly, like, Andrei Arlovsky, I don't know the last time that dude was relevant. Like, it's been 20 years, right? Like, so yeah, I just, we'll see what happens. I don't know. Maybe the Men of the Year synced up with American Top Team. I don't know. We'll see. All right, moving on. We did get a Chris Jericho promo backstage. He says that he's endured the labors of Jericho, but he has paid a price. And he lays out some of the violence, he lays out about some of the violence that was done to him. But he says that he survived it, and he's won. And he's gotten the ultimate prize because tonight, one-on-one, he's got MJF. And he might not have the Judas music or Judas effect, but what he does have is the upper hand and the momentum and 5,000 friends of Jericho that are going to sing him to the ring. MJF cannot stop him. He's not as good as he thinks he is. And this is the night of Le Champion. He's going to kick his bitchy ass and beat him tonight. So Kate, we're building to this match now. I only want to kind of talk. I thought that this was delivered fine by Jericho. That's not even what I want to talk about here. What I want to talk about here is we've talked about this. I just didn't think this final match, this final labor almost felt as big as it could, right? Like, I get the story here, right? He's been through four tough matches to get to this point. So maybe you don't necessarily need as big a stipulation here. But he did take away the Judas Effect, which has won all of these matches for him. So, like, I guess it's there, but, like, that, it was almost like we talked about with the Blood and Guts and the Stadium Stampede, like, what is the next thing? And it's got to kind of be as big as what you did. And I just feel like in this case, it's the same thing. Like, it just, this final one didn't live up to everything that preceded it. So at this point, before getting to the match, did you have any, you know, kind of like second thoughts as to how this match would play out, as far as, did this seem as big to you as it should have felt?
No, you know, I kept waiting for something to kick in. And even after last week's match, not feeling like as big of a thing either. I thought for sure they were going to make it, like, the crowd is singing Judas. I thought for sure this was going to be a retirement thing that Jericho gets out of somehow, or something like that. Like, they were just going to add some extra weight to it, to your point. Especially with, like, the crowd singing him down the ramp. It almost feels like a changing of the guard in some ways. I thought maybe he was going to say, your inner circle buddies maybe need to go away for the rest of their lives, if that's the case. You know, something to give it a little more teeth. I'm with you. I do like how they ended up booking it out, which we will talk about later. But
yep.
I am with you on the fact that, like, 4 and 5, nothing is going to feel as shock and awe as Nick Gage, right? But, like, bringing right. back Juventud Guerrero was insane, right? So it's like, you have to, you can't, like, make the climax there and then have this be the ultimate part of the story, right? So, yeah, I'm with you on that. But yeah, as far as the actual promo went, it was fine. But I was with you. I was like, what are they going to add? And then it didn't happen.
Yeah, that was the reason I asked, is because that's kind of, I felt that same way too. Like, is there something more coming that we didn't see that, you know, the heel is going to add at the last moment? But at this point, I was still just kind of like, man, I hope this match lives up to it, because if not, it's just going to fall flat and feel like, why did we get here? You know what I mean? Yeah. So. Either way, let's keep going. Jurassic Express versus the Young Bucks for the AEW World Tag Team Championships. Listen, this was, I think, one of the best matches I've seen Jurassic Express be involved in on television. I mean, they're always good, but there was a lot of ups and downs with this match, right, Kate? Like, both teams had the upper hand at different points. The ending to this match, too, just the incredible.
Oh, my God.
The athleticism we saw out of Luchasaurus. And I feel like, again, we see it a lot, but, man, it's always amazing. Like, this dude is gigantic, and he's doing moonsaults off of the apron, you know, onto a group of dudes and landing on his feet. You know what I mean? Like, he's getting it all the way around. You know, Jungle Boy just continuing to be a madman, flying around the ring, hitting all of his crazy moves. You know, he's able to get everything, you know, kind of into the Bucks he can. Ultimately, you know, the Bucks are, you know, there is some shenanigans, right? So we get the Good Brothers on the outside kind of coming in into play, distracting Rick Knox, right? So we're going to talk about Rick Knox here. We even get Marco Stunt get just destroyed by Kenny Omega with the chair. We do see that,
much to Matt's delight.
To Matt's delight, for sure. We do actually see a moment where it looks like that chair is going to ruin it for the Bucks. So maybe we had the idea that, you know, the belts were going to be lost the same way, right? The chair was going to do it. Didn't happen. Ultimately, when we get to the end of this match, the Young Bucks win by pinfall with the BTE trigger on Jungle Boy. So Jungle Boy gets pinned. They retain the title. Now, post-match, we get more shenanigans. Gallows and Kenny, I'm sorry, I should also mention, I forgot, Christian Cage tries to come out and get involved in this match too, but he gets he runs off with Kenny, and then Doc Gallows and Kenny bring him back out after the match. So Christian Cage is now getting beat down in the ring. He gets the One Winged Angel. Callis comes out and gives him a kick. You know, Callis actually counts the three for the pinfall, and the Elite are now posing in the ring with all their gold. They pose on the stage, and Jurassic Express are now tending to Christian Cage. So again, we're seeing these storylines kind of blend together here, right, Kate? Like, we get Christian Cage here getting beat down by Kenny. Jurassic Express, you know, are in with Cage. You know, he's trying to help them. They're helping him. So we're intertwining a lot here. But as far as this match goes, I thought it was fantastic. And I thought all the stuff afterward made complete sense too. And we will talk about some of the other stuff that gets announced later. So let's save that. But what did you think, Kate, about the match and the post-match?
I thought the match was great. It's nice to see Luchasaurus, I felt like, actually shined maybe the most in this match, to your point. A lot of people forget Jungle Boy was supposed to be the one who was going to be developing and take a little bit longer. Luchasaurus was supposed to be, like, the guy in this tag team. And he's incredible. Like, he's so agile for someone his size, and was such a fun gimmick. Like, what a unique combination of things. And the Bucks are the Bucks. Like, they're just fantastic, and they're really good at making things look cohesive regardless of who they're facing stylistically. And I mean that within their own team, right? Like,
yep.
FTR has similar ring styles with both of those guys. Like, they both operate in a very similar capacity. Jurassic Express, not so much. Like, Luchasaurus is a very different animal, pun now very intended as it was coming out of my mouth, than Jungle Boy. So, and great tag teams are made up of both guys that work very similarly or guys that work very differently, I think. And the Young Bucks can just handle whatever is thrown their way. So I thought the match was fantastic. This refereeing shit has, they've got to rein it in. It's just egregious. And I know there's like a BTE thing about the Bucks paying them out. I don't care. It affects the viewing experience of Dynamite. And I like when we see things from Dynamite trickle down into the alternate programming. And I like when we see it come back up, but not in a way that it actually affects the rules of the matches. It should affect storylines, but not like the way a match plays out on your television, because if then you're not watching those things, it's not an added layer, it's a determining factor. So, and we already saw it earlier in the episode with Aubrey, I basically expect it from Knox at this point. So right. Just a frustrating pain point that detracts from the viewing experience. But I said it to Sean on Friday, and I say it to everybody all the time. If that's what I'm complaining about with AEW, I'll take it. Like, if my complaint is about the refereeing latitude, that's a really good sign for the rest of the product. But it is a persistent complaint.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And I think on Knox, like, listen, if he's having the wool pulled over his eyes every now and again,
you get fired if you're that bad at your job.
Well, you're right. But I mean, like, so my point is, like, listen, if Knox is going to get distracted every now and again and something's going to happen, fine. But it's like literally every time he turns his back, he's missing everything going on. Like, I just don't understand. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, Aubrey tonight, we saw, you know, kind of miss something, right? Like, or she was kind of giving some latitude. We don't always see that out of Aubrey. So when it happens, it's like, come on, Aubrey, like, what do you have, an off night? Like, you know, it's not that big a deal. But I'm with you, like, with Knox, like, either rein it in or I just don't know. Like, they have to change something. Like, it can't happen all the time. Like, it's literally all the time. But I'm with you. If that's our complaint, like, I'll have that complaint, because everything else, like, the in-ring product for the most part is good. you know.
We do have some chat in the Facebook chat about this that I just wanted to call out. Joe Oven said that he would like Jungle Boy Christian run, and also thinks that there would be great singles. I think eventually we'll head there. I think Jungle Boy just has single star written all over him. And Eric Raiden, who I don't think we've had in the chat before, said the Cutler Luchasaurus Jurassic Park Flair moment was hilarious.
Oh my God. How did I forget about that? Yes.
Good chat in the Facebook. Thank you so much for, I know it's 12:07 Eastern Standard Time, and we always have Berg chatting us up there too. And he's been in and out, and we appreciate him so much, and everybody giving us support on this, especially when it's after AEW, baby. It's like, it's after dark.
Oh God.
But it's after Dynamite.
Yeah. No, that is, man, thank you for reminding me about that Jurassic Park moment. I thought that was so funny. And he was doing it perfect, just waving the flare above his head.
So great.
Just perfect. All right, moving on from this, we get a Britt Baker interview backstage with Rebel and Jamie Hayter. She says that when Red Velvet tried to rain on her parade in her town, she knew she had to bring backup, and Velvet made a bad choice bringing Chris Statlander, who's friends with everybody. Hayter says she and Britt go way back. So when she asked her to come and sort these silly girls out, she did so with pleasure. And that next week, Hayter wants a match against Red Velvet. So she can knock her down a peg or two. And then Britt Baker says that gold's definitely not Velvet's color and never will be. But regardless, they're going to have some fun next week, and we go to break. So we'll get to see Jamie Hayter next week for her. Well, not her first in-ring action AEW, but first in quite some time. So this should be interesting. What's going to be interesting to me is to see if Red Velvet can keep this high level of, you know, kind of in-ring work up with Jamie Hayter.
Well, first of all, I'll just say Jamie Hayter did manage to find a weight rack at some point. She is jacked. Her upper body, I was like, oh yeah. No, she looks like the enforcer type. Good call, Britt. That looks like somebody that Britt Baker would hire to be her enforcer. Very well done. She's done a good and comfortable too in this segment, and I really like what Britt had to say. Harmless segment. Didn't move the needle a ton, but did its job, I think, in introducing us to Jamie and moving things right along.
Yeah, I have a feeling that next week, you know, Chris Statlander will probably be somewhere in Red Velvet's corner or lurking about somewhere, and maybe we'll get to see her come up and get in Britt's face, because I have a feeling that Statlander is going to be the next up for that AEW Women's Championship. But we'll see how that goes. All right, we get a video packet from Matt Hardy explaining that he kicked Wheeler Yuta's ass, and he'll beat any of the Best Friends again. So just a quick thing. Clearly, the Matt Hardy thing is not over with the Best Friends. It looks like possibly him and Orange Cassidy are going to have a program, because Orange Cassidy basically responded and said, he thinks he can kick anybody's ass. All right, well, we'll see. So it is what it is, Kate. I mean, I don't know. The whole Matt Hardy family office thing isn't really doing much for me at this point.
Did they see what Orange Cassidy did to Sting? Like, maybe just be careful with your words. When you saw the brutal collision of kicks that Sting and Orange Cassidy had a few weeks ago, I don't know. I'm not going to threaten that guy. That was some of the most physical violence I've ever seen in my whole life. So, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, be careful who you're calling out, Matt Hardy.
I would check with HR if I'm the Hardy family office.
Yeah. That's probably a good idea.
Probably a good call, right?
I also want to always think it. I also want to call out, maybe this is just the first time I noticed it, Orange Cassidy's t-shirt where it was literally just the hand in the pocket. And I think it said fantastic. Just fantastic.
It's the best.
So, Kate, we get Tony Schiavone interviewing Paul White in the ring. Paul White says it was amazing to get back in the ring last week, and he's still hyped up about it. He's excited because he's got a real huge announcement he wants to share with us. But QT Marshall enters with the Factory. And QT says they've got a problem, a really big ass problem. And they wanted to come down and stop Paul before he says something he couldn't deliver on. Because in AEW, we don't say things to build up fan anticipation just to let the fans down. Wink. So White tells him to come to the ring because he's sure Schiavone can count the three. But QT says there's a reason Tony Khan hired him as an announcer, and Paul has no idea what he's talking about. Marshall says as a producer, he's privy to all kinds of information, and asked the truck to put pictures of Paul White's hip operations up from the last 18 months. He said he's had, eight surgeries in the last 15 months. I don't know if he meant on his hips, but he basically said it's a miracle, going to the great lengths to try to get back in the ring. And then they put up a picture actually of like the hip incision scar on the stitches. It kind of showed him side of his ass. And White says that White asked QT if he really thought it was a good idea to show pictures of his hip and his big, beautiful ass on normal TV. Did you think it would embarrass him? He said, for a man that's supposed to be in the know, QT Marshall didn't know anything. I'm sorry, QT Marshall didn't know anything. But Paul's going to clue him in. He had a talk with TK last week. He's got to match it all out, and QT Marshall is the opponent. So, Kate, I know when Paul White was first brought in, we kind of all said, like, we don't necessarily need to see him in the ring. You know, if he does, like, it'll be whatever. But we're going to get QT Marshall and Paul White at All Out. You know, I don't know if that's a needle mover for me, but if you're going to put Paul White in the ring, I'm going to say QT Marshall's probably a smart choice. He can really help protect him and make him look good.
Okay, first of all, QT, if you're listening, all right, look here. You cannot give a promo about building up fan anticipation and not letting them down if you are not going to bring that cute-ass little dog that you have to the ring with you. Because, guys, if you have not seen pictures of Buttercup, QT Marshall's dog, oh my gosh, your heart will explode. It's the cutest dog in the whole world next to Buster, obviously. Almost looks like a little Buster, to be honest. So I just, you know, consistency is really important in wrestling. And I want QT Marshall to know that if you're going to go out there and say stuff like that, you better bring your cute ass dog with you. So,
well, you know,
now that that's out of the way with. Yeah, I think this is good. Do you think, and I'll bring this back from a couple weeks ago that Shining Wizards Kevin said, do you think we see a go-go here? Like that it might be a punch to the punch situation? Or do you think we're just going to get a match between a veteran and a guy who hasn't been in the ring in a while, but is enormous and can kick someone's ass?
I don't know a go-go status if he would be cleared this quickly, because I know that the rumors were around that surgery was like they didn't know if even post-surgery if he'd ever be able to get in the ring again because of his vision. So I don't know, Kate. I would love to see a go-go at some point, but I don't know if this is the point. You know what I mean?
It's only been a few months too. I just tried to look up the dates. So he's probably not ready for that. Do you think Camarado gets involved here? Like, do we think any other Factory action?
I think that possibly Camarado, Paul White. I almost made a fatal error there. No more BS. At some point we can get to Camarado, Paul White, because Paul White would go down to Camarado and it would make Camarado look like, you know, the new big guy on the block. So I think we can get there eventually. I just don't know if they're going to get involved in this match at the pay-per-view.
I have some fun stuff happening in the Facebook chat that I'm going to throw your way. First of all, Berg says, that is one cute pup. Hell yeah, that is a cute dog, that Buttercup. Second of all, White and Fuego versus the Factory. Your thoughts?
No, I don't need Fuego to be involved in this.
No. Boo. You're no fun, Joe Evans. I am with you.
He got a contract. He's fine.
No, I think he's going to go get his ass kicked by Andrade for a little bit.
Yeah.
But I like your booking, Joe Evans.
Yeah, all right, Joe Evans. Whatever. Kate, I don't want to forget this because it just hit my brain. My favorite part in this whole thing was when Paul White.
big Paul White. He's big.
He's huge. When Paul White said to QT Marshall, he's like, let me tell you something, plugs. Referencing his hair plugs. I thought that was fantastic.
I forgot about that. I even have it written in my notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
So anyway, let's move on from this because they'll build this, I'm sure, over the weeks. We get Jade Cargill promo, Kate, if you'd be so kind to shut the fuck up. Jade Cargill cuts a promo and they call out Kira Hogan. Her and Smart Mark Sterling call out Kira Hogan and says that, pretty much says that she they watched the Miro match last week against Fuego and she wants to have her fun. So they call out Kira Hogan to have a match with her next week. Now, Kira Hogan, Jade Cargill, a match can be a lot of fun, Kate. But I want to throw this at you. I think what could be more money for that bitch is to team up with Kira Hogan.
It's funny you say that for a couple of reasons. One, you said what could be more money, and you are Aunt Money. So if anybody knows money,
it's me.
It's you, pal. But earlier in the night, Joe Evans said, what do you think about Jade and Kira Hogan versus Britt and Jamie? Whoa, I love that. Great call. That could be really fun. I think that would be good because Jade has some work to do in the ring based on her dark match this week. It was not good.
I don't know if her opponent. I don't know if her opponent was the greatest either in those matches.
No, but it was. It was not. All of that was not great. But I think that would be a fantastic duo, Kira Hogan and Jade. I think that would be so great, teaming up against Jamie and Britt. Why the heck not? But just in general, I think the two of them being like these badass muscle women, let's go all day. I'm into it.
I think that that's where the money's at. And I think maybe we get there. I think maybe something will happen next week where she'll, like, Jade will win this match, right? But she'll maybe be impressed with Kira Hogan and then we'll see them possibly start to work together. So that's where I'm hoping they go. So we go to commercial and come back with Tony Schiavone interviewing the Elite backstage. And Don Callis is talking about how the Bucks are the best team ever and tells them to take 2 months off. But Tony says that TK has had enough and they're going to have a tag team tournament to crown the number one contenders for the steel cage title match at All Out. And then the Elite kind of scream and bicker and then they storm off. And I think it was, oh my God, I can't remember, with the cold spray and the mask. I'm losing my mind.
Cutler.
Thank you. I think it was Cutler at the end, who basically says, wait, can I go to Honolulu? Cause I think
we broke Aunt finally.
No, it's late.
It is late and Ant stays up and he edits these episodes after for all of you wonderful people. Shout out to you, buddy. But I think
Matt's not here. No. I just forgot his name. I think I thought Cutler afterwards because I think Don Callis was saying, like, go to Hawaii, you know, take a break. Like, and it was Cutler after everybody storms off was kind of still standing there. He's like, well, can I go to Hawaii? So Kate, not necessarily here to talk about anything for this backstage segment, but the announcement that at All Out, we're going to have a cage match for these titles. I think that's pretty exciting because now I think there is even more of a chance that these belts come off the Bucks because there's quote unquote no way for anybody to get involved, right? Like there could still be ways for people to get involved. We've seen it, but I think this could be good. And of the teams that they've announced or that they did announce, it was going to be the Varsity Blondes, the Death Triangle, Jurassic Express, and Private Party. My guess, Kate, to be honest, is this is going to come down to, and by the Death Triangle, it would be, I think, the Lucha Brothers, right? Because Pac is involved. Yes. Pac is involved in a match. So I would think that this either has to go to the Lucha Brothers or Jurassic Express. And I would think that it's possible going to go to the Lucha Brothers because Jurassic Express did just have this chance. So either way, if it comes down to either one of those teams in a tag team cage match, I'm all for it All Out. Do you like the idea of this short tournament plus the cage match?
I love that idea. Because I think everybody involved would actually use the cage in really cool ways. My only complaint about cage matches is when they don't use the cage and it just looks like lattice work and it's boring and not exciting. But yeah, I think it's cool and I love tournaments. I'm a tournament mark. I think it's fun. And it seems like they might have actually used the standings for this one. So, or the ranking. Oh my God, we didn't even talk about rankings, Ant.
I was actually just
for me.
No. There were no rankings released today for some reason.
No rankings. That's the second time they've done that to us. It seems like they might have actually used the rankings to seed the tournament, which would make me have to not complain for a week. So touche, you guys.
I think, yes,
I like it.
Personally, just my conspiracy theory is that maybe it was so noticeable that the Acclaimed was just gone from the rankings last week that maybe they just forgot about the rankings. But usually when they do that, like they'll release them the next day or something, like when they've not released them in the day. So I don't know, but I'm with you. It seems like they really kind of followed along with like who the top teams are. So maybe in a way, Kate, this is almost like them resetting that tag ranking, you know, for the division. But either way, I'm good with the teams they put in because I think all of the tournament matches we're only going to get, you know, like two matches and then the finals, right? So it's a really short tournament. But I think all of the tag matches we'll get in this eliminator, you know, pool are going to, they have potential to be really, really good.
Eric in the chat, killing it. Welcome aboard and making really great points. The cage match announcement at least justified all the interference in the tag title match. That's a very good point. It's a very good point.
Yes, that is a great point. And it also, you know what else, you know, now thinking about that point, it also validates the fact that the people, the higher ups are kind of seeing what's going on, right? Like the announcement was that Tony Khan has had enough. You know what I mean? So like they're aware of the shenanigans that are going on. So that's kind of another good point. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this. Let's see how this shakes out. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. We go back to the ring and Taz is there with Hook Brother. And they introduce, after he introduces Hook, he gives an introduction to Absolute Ricky Starks, and then Ricky Starks get on the mic to says that he's for the world and it's gonna be like that for a long time, and that he and Brian Cage keep missing each other, but he wants to talk mano a mano tonight. But when he calls him out and they cut backstage, Will Hobbs is laid out Brian Cage, but Cage gets back to his feet. They start fighting back and forth. Ricky demands that they cut the feed, and then Team Taz all runs off together. My assumption is to either save Hobbs or beat down Cage, but we don't get to see that. So Kate, really the only thing I want to bring up here is like, we keep kind of getting these little snippets of like, you know, Cage and Starks, and like, we're going to get a rematch. We haven't really built that yet. I have a feeling they're going to do that for All Out, but like, do we need to push this ahead a little bit? Do we need to get something definitive here? I think it's like too small. Like these bites have been a little too small.
Yeah, this feud to me, I was wondering this a couple of weeks ago. I was like, oh, I wonder if this is going to be one of those ones that probably moves to Rampage as like a focal point. I could see this being something that gets a little bit more breathing room over on Rampage. So that was my only thought, but I'm with you. Not a ton to dig into here. I just think Ricky Starks is the steal of the century from NWA for, well, Thunder Rosa, I guess, is really the biggest steal of the century from NWA, but Ricky Starks, certainly not far behind that. I just love every time he's on my screen, oozes charisma, but I'm with you in that, like, the wheel needs to turn a little bit faster with this.
Yeah, I am very into another Ricky Starks cage match and Brian Cage match. I just need them to move his head. So.
And it also should be noted, brother. That's it.
Oh, okay. I was like, uh-oh, don't steal the gimmick.
No. We needed to just say.
Another
brother. Hook brother.
Brother. So we do get Tony Schiavone with Death Triangle backstage next. And Pac calls Andrade El Idolo out and says that if Andrade wants a match at All Out, then perfecto. And that's the same pay-per-view where he obliterated Kenny Omega on 2 weeks' notice. And that he's glad that El Idolo brought his bollocks. But what chance does a man like him stand against a bastard like Pac? But then Andrade and Chavo come into the picture, and Andrade says that if Pac wants the match, he has to agree to the conditions. It's a whole basically ream of paper, and Chavo wishes the Lucha Brothers good luck, but says they'll never be champions with a boss like Pac. So Kate, it sounds like we're going to get some sort of match stipulation or something at All Out. With the statement from Chavo, do we think that there's some sort of weird stipulation in this match that if Pac loses, that basically the Lucha Brothers go and work for Andrade? Is that where we're going?
It kind of feels like a custody battle a little bit.
It does.
There's a few things about that that I love. I hate to be this girl, but fuck it. WWE is really bad at how they handle heritage and race. And this feels like a matter of pride for Hispanic wrestling and not like, hey, you guys are Hispanic, let's smush you together. I really appreciate how refreshing the storytelling has been with that. Like, since Andrade has come in, he has said that he has wanted to represent Hispanic culture and Hispanic wrestling. And this feels like it's been very organically built and done, and that he is doing it for his country, not because they're all from the same place. So I very much appreciate the authenticity of this angle. The thing that I don't like about it is I really wanted LFI to come over and to be able to sing Summer Girls by LFO for just more weeks on end. But I do kind of like this custody battle angle. If I'm not going to get LFI on AEW, I thought that was going to be our forbidden door to ROH opening, but maybe that'll just be Jonathan Gresham, in which case I'm not upset either. But yeah, I think this is kind of fun. I like that the Lucha Brothers have bounced around so much. It's kind of just like, all right, let's find you a permanent home now. Is it with Eddie? Is it with Pac? Is it with Andrade? Like, it feels like all of that cloudiness just kind of unfolded. And now they're putting something intentional behind it, because some of it was just like injuries and stuff, like just the way it unfolded. So I like that they're creating clarity in the real life fact that they've just been bouncing around so much.
Yeah, I mean, to your LFI point too, Kate, I don't think that that is necessarily off the table. They could show up at All Out and play factor into this match. Like, if Penta and Phoenix is a stipulation, like if Pac loses and they have to go work for Andrade, maybe that's where we see LFI come in. You know what I mean? Like, to play a factor in the match. Possible. I don't know if it's going to happen anymore, because summer's over, essentially. But
they might not stop by for the summer.
No, not for the summer. All right. So moving on from this, we go to Penelope Ford versus Thunder Rosa. Now, I kind of said in the Discord, Kate, this just felt disjointed to me, right? Like, I know we've seen Penelope have really good moments and really, you know, low moments, not super low, but she hasn't had great matches. This had moments to it that felt good. And then there were moments that felt super disjointed. Like early on in this match, I don't know if fucking Penelope fell or if she thought it was going to be a different move, but it just caused things to kind of seem disjointed. There was something else that happened where at one point Thunder Rosa went over the rope or through the rope and was on the apron. And you could see she's like waiting there for a beat too long before Penelope like does her move. And I'm not sure if that's Penelope overthinking something or what. It just, there were little weird moments in this match for me like that, that kind of pulled me out of it. Just to give you the result, Thunder Rosa did win by submission with a leg trap, head and arm triangle choke. So we see more strong submission work out of Thunder Rosa, but I just don't, this just didn't do it for me tonight, which is kind of disappointing. Because usually we see really good stuff out of Thunder Rosa, and Penelope has shown she could play up to the level of competition. So it just seemed maybe like there was a contrast between them tonight, not their best work.
I agree with you. So I thought the finish was awesome. That looked really cool. And I'm with you entirely that there were some spots in this that looked really good. Penelope's just inconsistent. I would like to see her like, Bunny was inconsistent, and then she's been very consistent of late, right? I'm waiting for that consistency out of Penelope. She and Alley Cat had a great match at GCW where they did some really great work. I don't know what it is with Penelope because I can't point to it, but I have a feeling they just need to lean more into her strengths than they have been. And Thunder Rosa gives pretty much everybody great matches, but I don't know if she was able to dial it down enough for Penelope here, but I'm with you. It just felt disjointed. Some people just don't have ring chemistry. Like I've talked about it with WWE, like Charlotte and, or I'm sorry, Asuka and Rhea are two of the best women wrestling in the world. And they had like a series of matches and maybe one of them was pretty good and they're both great. But like, sometimes there's just not that whatever that is there. We've seen it with the men too.
Right.
So this might have just fallen flat, but Penelope's getting reps on Dark and stuff and working. So I don't know where the inconsistency is, but yeah, this fell a little flat to me. My complaints are on Twitter if you want to see them, but also remain the same in that there just aren't a ton of stakes in this match. And I know they had a match on Dark. I continue to reiterate that I feel that that's not good enough when that's the only women's match we're getting. We did get some great promos from Britt and we did get a great promo with Jade. So I don't want to shit entirely because there are good signs and optimism coming out of this, but like there needs to be stories with these matches so that when like this was probably below average, but when they're average or better, it makes them feel really important. I think what we saw in Britsburg was a really good example of that. It was probably between average and above average, but the story made it feel bigger and the crowd made it feel huge, right? So my complaints continue to be the same. I'm trying to be a little bit less ragey about it this week because my voice just literally hurts, so I can't scream.
Well, so you're welcome. Well, I guess the only thing that could have been a story here, right, would have been like a ranking thing, right? And I thought I saw something on maybe like AEW Twitter that was almost like a match card or something like that. And it was like, you know, the number five against the number two, right? And I think it was like five was Penelope, number two was Thunder Rosa. Like if that was, you know, something they wanted to play up was like a ranking game, right?
Yes.
Then I guess there's a little bit of story there, right? So this matters to the rankings, but they didn't really push that. So I guess that they're not going to go, they weren't going to go with that, then it kind of, you're right. It just does seem like a one-off match. Even if they just played up the fact that, hey, Penelope Ford had a win on Dark, a win on Elevation, like she's on this roll, you know, and they, I guess there was this small story where she beat up Masha Slamovich after the match and Thunder Rosa made the save because Masha worked for Mission Pro, and they did mention that on Dark. So I guess there's that little bit of story there too, right? She's standing up for her performer, or her athlete. But I'm with you. This was a really loose story.
We don't need to dig deep. Just you saying Masha Slamovich was just a reminder about how that's the best name in the world. But I did want to point out that I do have enablers in the Facebook chat. Joe Evans pointing out that, oh, the girl on TV, another LFO song. And we are talking about women's wrestling. Berg saying he prefers the Jennifer Love Hewitt song. Joe Evans with Girls Stop By. And Joey Bod, a newcomer to the chat too, I believe as well, said that Chinese food makes him sick. So hopefully you didn't have any. Feel better, and thank you for taking over the chat with LFO references, because it just makes my soul just feel so good and come to life.
And you also know better than to sing.
New Kids on the Block.
So moving on from this, we do get a recap of Malakai Black's presence in AEW so far. And then Tony Schiavone interviews Arn Anderson and Brock backstage. So Arn says that he tries not to get emotional, but things happen really fast in AEW. And then things crash around you before you know it. And then you're in the middle of all the turmoil coming out of the darkness. And Black appeared and kicked his head off, and the whole world was spinning. And then he gets the word that his son Brock has a match against Malakai Black next week. And that, you know, Arn says that he appreciates Brock trying to avenge him, but Black is dangerous and will hurt him. But Brock says he's not going to air any dirty laundry on TV, but that match is signed and he's not asking. He's telling this time. So Kate, Brock is going to get murdered on television. Yeah. By Malakai Black.
We're going to see man die.
Now, again, I think, I don't remember, somebody in the Discord was like, why? This makes no sense. Maybe it was you, Kate. I don't know, to be honest. But all I know is that I don't need a reason. I just want to see Malakai Black on television. Like,
yeah.
I don't care. I just want to see more Malakai Black.
Couldn't agree with you more. I think Malakai Black has had one of the most perfect debuts that I've ever seen, like as far as a story build out. Cody gets a lot of credit with that too, because I think he's set it up so perfectly that anytime he goes into Cody versus Cody, like he gives Malakai so much to play off of. I could barely pay attention to this promo because Brock Anderson stood like this.
Looking like time. Looking like Arn.
But it didn't look like poise. It looked like he had shit or had a stick up his butt or I don't know. It just, the camera angle, it felt very Cal Naughton. If it didn't feel like Arn, it felt very, I don't know what to do with my hands. It was, I don't think it was just the way he was positioned. It was not, I was distracted by his posture instead of feeling like he looked poised. It felt like he was doing an impression. But anyway, Malakai Black is going to probably give him a black mass and destroy him. And I will be extremely entertained by that.
I can't wait to see that next week. We get a commentary hype up for all the shows that are coming up next. We'll review those cards. We won't do that now after we get through this. But Kate, then we get a Miro promo. And Miro says that, Fuego del Sol took the easy way out and took something he wasn't entitled to. Miro serves an Old Testament God every day and his hot wife every night. And if they don't come for him, he'll come for them all. And the Redeemer wants to talk with Eddie Kingston. Kate, you're an Eddie Kingston mark. What do you think about this?
I'm so excited. I sounded like a little girl with good reason. What an awesome program.
I hope this is a longer lasting feud than we've been getting from Miro, because they've built him up properly to this point, right? Like, he's mostly been ripping people apart. He had kind of a multi-match feud with Lance Archer, but not a ton beyond that, because they've just been building him to be this champion who we've now, I think pretty much everyone has fallen in love with and has been such a 180 from, excuse me, the way that he came in. Let him and Eddie Kingston go for a really long time, and then, you know, give Eddie the title at Arthur Ashe in front of me and you and a bunch of other people, Mark Order family and New York family alike. Either way, I think this is going to be gangbusters, and I think it'll be a longer reaching feud. I also have just been so impressed by how much Eddie Kingston has come into this company, always been around a title feud for the most part, like so much work with Omega, so much work with Moxley, so much work in the tag title picture, as well as the championship picture, that for him to then move to the TNT title feels like such a natural and organic flow to things. So I hope that this is a multi-month feud, because I think it deserves it. And I think between Miro's intensity and Eddie's mic and storytelling skills, this could be something that's very, very, very special.
Yeah, I agree with you. Now, I do think that they need to put this belt on the line against somebody at All Out. Do I think that that's Eddie? No. But if they do, I think there's still a way for them to get to Arthur Ashe and give this belt to Eddie. I think possibly, you know, if you want to put them together at All Out, they have a match. Eddie loses and says, you know, I think I can do that. You know, maybe I want to run this back one more time. Arthur Ashe, you could do that, you know, sort of thing. But I just think that this has to be, if you're doing your biggest pay-per-view, all your belts have to be on the line, yes. Right? So if it's not going to be Eddie, we have to give him somebody else at All Out. And I just, my only fear is that he calls Eddie out now. So I think they're going to do it at All Out. So then if we wanted it Arthur Ashe, they have to then, like I said, either Eddie says something like, I had a bad night, I want to run this back one more time, you know, blah, 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 whatever. Or they got to give him somebody else.
We'll just what about this?
Okay,
go on. What about Eddie Kingston goes over and faces a debuting Daniel Bryan in an open challenge?
That would be...
That's the correct reaction. There's no other reaction.
I mean, the only downside to that would be that Eddie is then a super transitional champ.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and to me, not that I think that would knock Eddie down a peg, but it would be such a bummer to have him win that and then face a Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson, excuse me.
The American Dragon.
That's right. And either lose it or he has to then beat, you know, Bryan Danielson. And maybe not the best way to be coming in as a surprise on that night. So either way, there's a way to get there. I just think they have to get it there. But it's going to be interesting. And I am all for Miro versus Eddie. All for it.
Man.
All right, Kate, we're almost at the end of the show. Moxley comes with a promo here. We have to talk about this because I thought this promo was fire. Mox says he's been thinking. I just did that about how everybody wants a piece of AEW now that they're the hottest promotion in the world. And what makes them think it's so easy. Kenny Omega needs a whole army to keep his title. Adam Page calls himself a cowboy, but he can't get over his quote high school drama emo bullshit. And Christian, he'll walk through Christian's should have stayed retired ass. That's the quote. Don't forget that Mox held the company on his back through empty buildings, uncertain times, and now everybody wants a piece. Well, it's time to send a message about what it means to be on top. And young Mr. Garcia wants a taste of the main event. Okay. Mox is going to give it to him in the main event of Rampage. But before he gets there, Mox wants him to ask himself if that's what he really, really wants. He says the referee and the ringside doctor are there for your safety, but they're not any of Mox's concern. Protect your neck and make sure this is where you really, really want to be, because it ain't no joke. Kate, Moxley just continues to cut these fantastic promos. Like, does it just not continue to boggle your mind how he was never able to do this before?
Not even that. Like, I say it with, I'm such an Eddie Mark. I'm sorry to use this as an example, but I say it about him all the time. And part of the reason I'm such an Eddie Mark is everything he says feels intentional and there's nothing superfluous about it. Whereas I love a great MJF promo. Sometimes he's really long-winded and sometimes there's just like a bunch of extra stuff in there that we could cut out. That's not a thing with Kingston, and it's definitely not a thing with Moxley. Like, how quick and effective this promo was and how much he just ran up and down the roster was so well done. Like, so well done. And he's so good at just making every word he says feel really important. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely eye-opening to think about the fact that he was fighting a plant in an insane asylum in a different company. And here we are just letting performers get out of the way and do what they do best. Like, just great work from Mox here. I've loved this iteration of him since he's come into AEW, and especially like kind of actually when he dropped the title since, and I loved his title run, don't get me wrong, but like this version of him just got like a little grittier, a little brawlier. It's been real fun. And this promo was just like a lot of holy shit. And like, I felt like 40 seconds. Like, it was so great.
Yeah, it was great. If for some reason you didn't see this promo, make sure you catch it. I thought it was really well done. And I'm with you, Kate. The fact that he's basically calling all these people out on the roster is awesome. It just shows you how he doesn't give a shit. He'll kick anybody's ass. Also pretty awesome that Daniel Garcia is getting thrown into the main event on the second show at Rampage with Mox. Mm-hmm. You know, so my again, word. I think that it also shows what, you know, Mox and maybe even the company think of Daniel Garcia, the fact that he can go in a main event with one of the biggest guys in this company.
Back to your point about Moxley and just what he did to the roster. Some of the best characters in wrestling just want to kick everybody's ass or just shoot on everybody. They don't care if they're a babyface or a heel. Like, clear storytelling is so important and heels versus faces is so important. But just like the general, I'll fucking fight anybody guy. Love it. Like, love it, love it, love it. And he's not in a feud with Hangman, but he called him out, right? Like, so just to reiterate that point. And also, yeah, give me Mox versus Garcia all day.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun to see that match on Friday night.
Special. It's going to be really special.
So, Kate, we get to our main event of the evening, the fifth Labor of Jericho, Chapter 5. Chris Jericho versus MJF. No Judas entrance, no Judas effect. If the Judas effect is used, it's an automatic loss. So just like everybody thought, the fans sung a cappella Judas as Jericho came out to the ring. As Mrs. Money said, very impressed that everybody started at the correct time. You know, perfectly timed out. And it was even funny. Dash has been doing the ring announcing lately. I don't know what's up with Justin Roberts, but Dash is doing the ring announcing and she started to introduce Jericho and then just stopped. Like, she stopped. I saw that too. and I think that was great. You lay out and just let the fans sing. And I think commentary kind of did the same thing. They just kind of laid out or they kept their talking to a minimum. During this moment. Very cool. And then the match gets started. One of my favorite things early on in this match, Kate, is they're brawling outside and MJF pulls a Jericho and he takes the camera from the cameraman and he's turning around and he puts his hand in front of the camera with the middle finger which is perfect. And then as he spins back around towards Jericho, Jericho standing up and punches the camera square in the lens. I just thought that was fun, fun move. And then, you know, we get back into the match. You know, there was a lot of back and forth here. We saw Jericho pull out the lion salt, which was fun. Always fun to see a good lion salt. And then we also get some shenanigans towards the end of this match, right? We have MJF try to use that ring to knock Jericho out. But as he turns around, I believe it's Ref Aubrey catches him. And she basically is using, you know, trying to get the ring away from him. Jericho is able to get Floyd out and hit MJF with Floyd. You know, and basically, Jericho goes to hit the Judas effect and stops because he realizes, he can't do it. But then MJF hits his own Judas effect and is able to get Jericho in the salt of the earth. Jericho is able to counter it for a two count, MJF is able to get the salt of the earth locked back in. Jericho actually submits to MJF. You know, she actually, Ref Aubrey pulls MJF off of Jericho because he keeps it cinched in. MJF celebrates. Jericho is kind of laying on the ground in defeat, and that's the end of the show. They really took it to the limit. And I honestly, Kate, wasn't sure how this was going to play out. I was a little surprised that Jericho didn't go home happy here. So what were your thoughts on this match? Because I actually thought this match was done pretty well. I thought this was a fun match, some good moments. But also, I'd like to know where you think we go from here, because I honestly don't know where we're going now.
Oh, man, it's really hard to tell. Which is good. So overall, I thought the match was really great. I thought I liked this booking. I like clean wins and losses. I think it makes for the most impactful storytelling. I didn't need a bunch of people from the inner circle coming down. I didn't need any gang wars here. This was very personal between MJF and Jericho. Entrance was great. You're completely right about Dasha just stopping. I think I'm with you. I loved the camera spot. MJF is so good at shit like that. Like, and that's just one of my favorite heel devices in the world, is taking what a face does and turning it on its head. Like, that's just fun storytelling. Very solid match. I don't know what happens here either. I don't know if there's a changing of the guard at the inner circle. I'm hoping we're just moving on from the inner circle peacefully. I don't think it needs to be a dramatic breakup, but certainly feels like Santana and Ortiz are in their own worlds. Sammy and Spears doesn't need what they have, the inner circle for what they have. Wardlow and Jake Hager are certainly just looming there, waiting for a rematch from their terrible MMA weird shoot thing that I hated. But like I've been saying it for a while, I feel like the inner circle is now holding back the people it was supposed to catapult. But I don't think you need a vicious breakup of any sort. I think you can just have something peaceful. I don't need like a changing of the guard thing. I don't want them to go there of like, Jericho's out, now Sammy's the new guy, or Buddy Murphy's the new guy, or whoever. Like, I don't need a new talent coming in to take over. I think we can just let that fizzle out and probably have some very like emotional Tony Khan licensed music video package about all of the times that the inner circle has given us. So, but I like that it's unpredictable, because usually their unpredictable is good, not unpredictable in a bad way. So I'll take it. But I like MJF going over with a submission here. Like, it makes him feel really fucking made and badass. And if Jericho is going to be doing touring and part-time commentary or whatever, like going away for a little bit, why not make MJF look great? Yeah. Here, so I think it's good. I'm with you. I'm intrigued to see where it goes next.
Yeah, I want to be clear too. I didn't have a problem with the way that this was booked. I'm kind of like, where do we go?
Yeah.
Like, how does this play out now? And I'm with you. It's going to be really interesting to see where it goes. And we'll see if anything comes up next week or even Friday night for that matter. So just to run down the cards for what's to come this week, Friday night will be episode 2 of AEW Rampage live from Chicago's United Center. It's being called The First Dance, and that building has been sold out. We're going to get Jon Moxley in action taking on Daniel Garcia. That basically was set up from tonight. So very short build, but I think we're all excited to see Mox versus Daniel Garcia. We're also going to get Jurassic Express versus Private Party in that first round match of the Eliminator Tournament. And we're going to see Jade Cargill take on Kira Hogan, where that bitch is promising to treat the Impact X the way that Miro did Fuego del Sol last week. That's Friday night. There's also a rumored,
there seems appearance. Like there's some open time on that card, Ant. Whatever do you think it might be filled with?
I think that we're going to get a 30-minute match with Jade Cargill, and we're going to get a 30-minute match with Daniel Garcia. We're going to have to figure out where the tag team's going to slide in. For next week's Dynamite, right now, the card that they announced was that we're going to get Jamie Hayter versus Red Velvet, looking for some retribution. We're also going to get the other first round match of that Eliminator Tournament, Varsity Blondes versus the Lucha Brothers. We pretty much agreed that Brock Anderson is going to get murdered live on television by Malakai Black.
You're going by.
And Orange Cassidy will be facing Matt Hardy. As that beef between the HFO and the best friends just continues to, kind of accelerate. Yeah. I don't know.
Want to throw it back to a couple of comments in the Facebook chat, especially from our newcomers. Joey Bod makes a good point. Hey, Jericho, you're the man of 1,004 holds. Did you suddenly forget all of them? That's a very, very fair point. And Joe Evans is with me on the Inner Circle highlight package and to set it to Celine Dion's Because You Loved Me. I already sang once this episode and I filled my quota, but you never know. Celine might make an appearance on a future ep.
You never do know where she's going to show up. So Kate, a couple things, news and notes from the week. It actually didn't make my list here. We should probably talk about the first thing that a lot of people are sort of like, wondering about. Max Caster apparently has pulled a lot of his AEW stuff off of his social accounts. People are kind of wondering what's going on with Max Caster, and there's been nothing out there. Some people the rumor mills are turning that some people think he's maybe done with the company. Other people are thinking maybe this is a work and he's going to reemerge as some sort of, straight laced, no nonsense guy. I don't know. This is kind of a weird situation, Kate. What do you think is going on with Max Caster? Is this a work?
Work, 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 work. I won't say anymore. God, see, male co-hosts never tell you when you have lipstick on your teeth. You're all the worst.
I mean, your window is like so small in the corner of my screen.
That's fair. That's fair. I think it is a work. I think, cause he was also like everything that he was liking on social media was WWE stuff and he's auctioning off his tights. It feels kind of worky considering what his gimmick is. I don't know what's going on with it. I'm very glad they've been using Bowens and that they've been giving him a chance to shine. Cause I think Bowens gets lost because of the gimmick, like that he's the boombox guy and he's just this hype man, but he's an incredible worker on his own. So I'm hoping regardless of what happens over the next few weeks that he continues to show what he can do, but it is a little weird, but to me, it feels pretty worky. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, no, I don't listen. I don't think it's, I think it is a work in some fashion. it's just interesting to see how many people took note of like what was going on, right?
And I don't necessarily love it if it's a work, because I won't tell anyone how to like run their own character and stuff, but like, you fucked up, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And even if you want to, if you want to work the second half of your suspension in a month, work it then. But like, shut the fuck up for a minute, because you fucked up. Like, you should lay low. That's not like, that's lazy heat. That's cheap heat. Get the fuck off social media and stop doing stuff like that for a minute. Like, actually go reflect, because you did something that was hurtful to a lot of people. Like, so I don't love it if he is working, at least right now. Like, you have a 2-month suspension, start that a month too, but like, take a break, dude, go for a walk.
right. Well, we'll see what happens with Max Caster. I don't think he's done with the company or wrestling in general, but we'll see where we're gonna go from here. The other thing, Kate, you know, obviously we know now Paul White's gonna be getting back in the ring for his first match in quite some time at All Out. But he did talk to WrestleZone this past week about what he's been doing to kind of prepare for that. And he said, like, he's been basically figuring out how to reinvent himself. So he said, this is the first time in many years I finally get to reinvent myself a little bit, trying to find updated gear that's not so much retro, the same gear that we've seen me in for years and years and years, stuff that's more appealing for toy manufacturing, for merchandising and branding, trying to experience all that and just finding a new look that encompasses who Paul White is. So it's a discovery process right now. He says, I'm driving the photo guys nuts at AEW because I'm trying to find something I like, and then I change my mind. So this is the first time in, I guess, back in Dungeon of Doom since I've had the chance to really figure out, well, this is what I'm going to be. This is what I'm going to look like. This is how I'm going to perform. This is what I'll be comfortable performing in. So we're still experimenting and still having fun, but I think I've got it narrowed down now. We've got some good options out there for a different look. Hopefully this new look will breathe in a little bit of life, will breathe in a little bit of life and let everyone know that though it's the same person on the inside, there's a lot of new things, that there's a new paint job. So we're ready to rock and roll. So it's kind of cool, Kate, to see that, like, even for somebody like Paul White, who could maybe just be complacent, be like, yeah, like, I just wear a black singlet. This is who I am. This is what I do. Like, I'm just going to go out there and do what I've always done, is actually interested in trying to figure out a way to kind of freshen himself up. And it seems to have invigorated him a little bit here.
I think when you're surrounded by an environment of young, hungry talent, and I don't want to say old talent, because it's like guys in their 30s and 40s for the most part, other than Jericho still, but like people who, like, man, if you haven't listened to Malachi Black on Talk is Jericho, you're depriving yourself at this point. It's such a good interview, and he's so passionate about wanting to put some of these young, he talked about Sonny Kiss and wanting to put Sonny over, and like the most sincere way. It was so wonderful. Like, when you have these people that care this much and you're surrounded by it, I don't think you, and you're coming back and it's like a big deal, pun half intended. I can't imagine how you wouldn't be jazzed about that. Like, oh yeah, I get to, like, this is a chance to completely wipe the slate clean at a completely new place. And yeah, I think it's that type of environment gets contagious with that stuff. So I'm not surprised. And I, as long as he, you know, changes his mind before they commit to a clothing manufacturer, because I can't imagine that's not a lot of material that you would have to pay for.
Yeah, I think you're right there. But it's also cool, Kate, because now he's probably the most in control he's ever been in his image, his character, and all that kind of stuff, right? Because even in the days of WCW, like, they didn't have full control. They probably had more than guys in the E. But like, now he's probably in almost full control, like bouncing things off of other people, but basically being the final say. So
yeah,
that's gotta be awesome.
So it's something he earned too. Like that seems to be the vibe of AEW in general, but like that's also you're kind of like legend status, bro. You get to do whatever you want now. That's awesome. I love it.
Totally. So we'll get to see what the reinvigorated Big Show looks like at All Out. The other thing that came out this week, Kate, was Ruby Soho put out a video. And, you know, we don't know what's going on here, but it looks like she was trying to catch a train from Orlando to New York Penn Station. So the video basically shows her kind of like walking towards a train or kind of like running for a train. She misses it and kind of like, you know, is upset about it. But, you know, it says to be continued. So you see where she's going because the ticket is pretty prominently displayed, you know, ORL to NYP, which would be New York Penn. For those not in this area, New York Penn Station is basically like a giant hub. In New York City, you can get trains anywhere and all that kind of stuff. Kate, there's a couple holes in this video, though, that I'd like to bring up. Despite I think it's very cool that she's teasing this out. And I think that it clearly, you know, I would say almost clearly means that she's showing up at Arthur Ashe. The holes that I'm going to put here for you are the fact that I don't believe that trains run directly from Orlando to New York Penn. That's one. And number two, Kate, have you seen the video?
I have.
Do you know where that she's trying to catch a train from?
It's definitely, I saw the New Jersey Transit.
Uh-huh.
Was it Newark?
It was Hoboken.
It was Hoboken. Okay. Well, now in her defense, who knows what happened? It is New Jersey Transit that we're talking about here. So if she was supposed to transfer, they are not a reliable transportation source. So it's very possible that they were like, oh, we had to route you instead of going through Secaucus. Now you have to transfer to Hoboken or some shit. That, if you're in New Jersey, you know that that happens. The biggest hole in this is that she's upset that she missed a New Jersey Transit train. It's going to be okay, girl. Trust me. You did yourself a favor. You're a big deal. Everyone's really excited. Someone will pay for your Uber. Somebody will let you. I'll drive you the rest of the way. It's so close. Take the path even. But yes. It's okay to miss New Jersey Transit, I promise. But exciting stuff.
it certainly is. And I guess, Kate, we should maybe bring in the people who might not be listening within this geographic area. You know, the video makes it seem like she is trying to go directly from Orlando to New York. For those of you who don't know, Hoboken, New Jersey, is literally across the river from New York City. The train that she'd be trying to get on would actually take her further away to then have to go into New York City. She could hop on basically a subway and get into the city. Either way, it means that she's not in Orlando. She's actually very close to New York. So if you're from this area and you're a wrestling fan, you saw this video, you're probably like, well, she's right there. Like, it is very clearly Hoboken. And I think at one point you can even see like one of the New Jersey Transit like screens that says like the train schedule. As a local, I thought it was funny. I poked like 1,000 holes in that video. I was like, she's right here. But yes, I'm with you. It's exciting to see that it appears that, you know, she might be showing up at Arthur Ashe.
And there are more vignettes to come from what I've read. And yes. Yeah, it would be really cool if she showed up at Arthur Ashe. And there are also rumors that she's showing up at GCW at some point. Obviously, neither of those are exclusive contracts, but yeah, she would be quite an addition.
She certainly would. Kate, we've got to talk about some of the trolling that's been going on. I'll call it CM trolling. we've seen clearly Kenny Omega's been wearing the Cookie Monster shirt. For those of you, we talked about it, I think, last week, but Cookie Monster was one of the things CM Punk said that CM could stand for as a joke. He said it in an interview. For those of you watching tonight's Dynamite show, Kenny Omega, when he came out to help the Bucks, was wearing a shirt. I don't know if you could notice right away, but it, very prominently later, you can see that it reads Chick Magnet. That is another CM statement that he said the CM stood for, which I think most people think that's what it is.
But he was in a tag team called the Chick Magnets.
That's right. The commercial, the new commercial for Rampage on Friday night, clearly has Excalibur saying like a quote, Darby Allin is close to being the best in the world. I mean, what the fuck are we doing, people? But the fun thing here is that CM Punk seems to possibly be trolling people as well. He did put out what looked like, I think, an Instagram story the other day, which was some would say a coded message. It was simply 05 and on the next line 11 and on the next line 21, which could be a coded message. Some are saying that it is the first line 05 would be the first summer of Punk, quote unquote,
Ring of Honor style. Yeah.
Ring of Honor 2005. The second summer of Punk in WWE, which would have been 2011, and 21 would be the upcoming third summer of Punk in AEW. That is one possible way we are currently being trolled by CM Punk.
I think he's debuting 3 months ago. That's what I put out there. Mm. I think he's debuting May 11th of 2021. And someone tweeted me back and said, I was there. It was amazing.
You missed it, Kate. You slept through the whole thing.
What a devastating thing, because I'm willing to leave a live show early to go watch it. But just May 11th, I guess it just slipped my mind.
You missed it. There was also a little bit more trolling, I think, that went on. Where was it? I'm sorry. I'm trying to find. So, CM Punk is doing, commentary. He was doing commentary at CFCC 99 this past Saturday, which is like a, you know, UFC style, you know, combats, promotion. Apparently he had some fun on commentary with his partner, John Morgan. There was a point in a match where Morgan said, quote, like in the first round, Hoffman is just returning to his wrestling. You know what I'm saying, Punk? Returning to his wrestling. To which Punk then replied, yeah, he's looking all elite right now.
Yeah, he likes to troll you right back, that old Phil.
There were also
posted Darby Allin's tattoo as a quote right on his Insta story, I think.
Who was that? I'm sorry. I missed the name.
Punk posted on his Instagram story one of Darby Allin's tattoos that is a quote, I think, yes, across his chest. Yeah, they're having fun. It's going to happen. I'm going to lose my mind.
Well, listen, it's crossing into other sports, too, because apparently the NFL Network's Adam Rank was in on the fun doing highlights of the Saturday game, Chicago-Miami preseason game. He was hyping the debut of Bears first-round quarterback Justin Fields and said, I think that was the most anticipated debut in Chicago until Friday when, presumably, CM Punk shows up on AEW. So it's out there in the world, Kate. People think it's happening. I'm still skeptical. I don't know.
I'm not skeptical. It's happening.
I don't know. It's going to be so funny if it doesn't.
Do you know, Chicago would burn to the ground unless it was Michael Jordan. I maintain that the only person you could bait and switch with is Michael Jordan.
It's good. Listen, you have to tune in. You got to tune in.
You just got to tune into AEW Rampage.
And I'll say this. You should be tuned into the Mark Order podcast. I just want to say this. We're not ending this up. We'll plug it again, but you should be following the Mark Order podcast socials, because Kate will be with Ryan Schlong in person. And Ryan Schlong is going to get this on film.
So embarrassing.
We are 100% going to put it on our social, regardless of whether somebody shows up or doesn't show up. The reaction is going on our social.
And oh my God, I'm going to be such a tiny human. It's going to be so
It'll be so great. So stay tuned to our social. Stay tuned to our social. Kate, the last thing I want to bring up was kind of funny. I don't know if you know who Gable Stevenson is. Do you know who Gable Stevenson is?
I do, but only because of what you're about to talk about. I did not know beforehand.
Perfect. So for those of you who do not know, Gable Stevenson, I'm going to tell you anyway, Kate, is an Olympic gold medalist. He apparently is in high demand. The WWE and the UFC are definitely interested in him. And I can tell you this. I saw his Olympic wrestling match. I am, you know, this is a shoot. I'm an Olympic nerd. I love the Olympics. It's competition like all day, every day. And I don't care if it's handball. I'll watch it. It's international competition. I happened to see his wrestling match like live at like 1 o'clock in the morning because it was on. And he won in like 2 seconds in the final 2 seconds, he hit a takedown to win the gold medal. It was amazing. I also saw him wrestle, in college, like on ESPN. There was nothing on one night. He was wrestling. He's phenomenal. And I think in that moment I said to Mrs. Money, he's going to go into professional wrestling. Like there's no way this guy's not going to be a professional wrestler. So anyway, the E and UFC are apparently interested. NFL is apparently a possibility for this guy, but he's got eligibility left to wrestle in college. So who knows what's going to happen? But apparently Jake Hager stepped into the spotlight, and he called Gable out on Twitter. The interaction did not go the way I think Jake Hager was hoping it would go. So Jake Hager basically put out there, I bet $20,000 that at Gable Stevenson could not take me down. Any takers? And then he hashtagged AEW Dynamite and at AEW on TNT. So Gable Stevenson replied, if you want to lose 20K in 5 seconds, let's go. So Jake Hager decided to respond back to that. Well, someone has to pay the taxes for your gold. Would you like Houston, Chicago, or New York? And hashtag AEW Dynamite. To which Gable Stevenson said, never heard of you, but DM for my address. I guess, oops. Oops for Jake Hager. Now, clearly, nobody really knows if Gable Stevenson has heard of the all-American wrestler from Oklahoma. You know, I figure if you're a wrestler, maybe you know who Jake Hager is. Yeah. So maybe this is all a work. Maybe he only actually knows Hager by the name of Jack Swagger and doesn't realize who this is. But it really was just funny to see Hager throw it out there and him be like, I've never heard of you, so let me know if you want to send me money.
Amazing.
Just so funny. So funny. So Kate, that's it, man. We're done.
We did it.
We've done it. We've done it with the two-man group. Okay. And we should be back to a four-man crew next week. So if you've missed Matt, he should be back next week. If you've missed the Rye guy, he should be back with us next week, Ryan Schlong, unless he's dog sitting for shitty dogs again. Or maybe he just doesn't want to do this and he doesn't want to break up with us already, Kate.
It's very possible. He might have commitment issues that we don't know about, because if Danny Jordan were here, we know he'd be here. I'll just put that out there.
That's right. He definitely, I mean, the ultimate would be if we could talk to Danny Jordan and just have her burn him for us.
Live. I want her to be on Zicky Dice's Lizards of Love thing so bad, and to make Ryan Schlong go on it. Zicky Dice, newly signed to Impact. Congratulations.
That's right. Zicky Dice. That's a good signing. That's a good signing.
It's a great place for him. I'm excited.
So Kate, I know you got a ton of shit going on. You want to plug anything?
Oh my gosh, I do. so this Tuesday and possibly moving forward, I am on Sour Graps with Alex Pulowski on Fightful. After NXT, we're just going to cry and have a funeral for NXT, I think, as quote-unquote significant changes for NXT are on the horizon. Very, very fun show. Check that out on Fightful. I'm also on the AEW Rampage and SmackDown post-show with Sean Rossap every Friday, except this Friday, I'll be at ROH, and he's in Vegas, so it's hosted by Jeremy Lambert and Alex Plowski. But there is a rumor that if I have a CM Punk meltdown, they might want me to just join in anyway. So I'll probably be there for that too. And of course, check out the Shining Wizards on Monday. I'm not going to be there, but Mickey James is. So listen to that and listen to us every Wednesday. Join the Mark Order.
That's right. So Kate's days are numbered here on the Mark Order podcast. So we'll be back to three people soon.
How dare you?
Listen, you can follow us at Mark Order Pod on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook.com/Mark Order Pod. Thanks to everybody who's been watching us tonight. Also, thanks to all the new followers. We got a bunch of new followers. I think Schlong's been working the Twitter real well. We got some new followers last night. Kate's obviously been appearing everywhere, so people are checking us out. Thanks for checking us out. You know, Kate's doing all these other podcasts. I guess if anybody wants us to come on anywhere, hit us up. We'll see what's going on. You know, definitely check us out on social. Like I said before, we've got stickers coming, so we're going to figure out how we're going to get stickers out to you guys. We're working on fun ways to maybe assign numbers to anybody who wants to be a numbered member of the Mark Order podcast. We are going to also be, Kate said she's going to be there Friday night, but her and Schlong are going to be at Ring of Honor in Philly Friday night. They're leaving early to catch Rampage, but they'll be there Friday. Kate, you're not going Saturday, are you?
I think I am.
All right. Kate might be going Saturday as well. So if you're going to Ring of Honor, hit up Kate and maybe meet up and say what's up. We, the Mark Order podcast, will be at the Newark AEW Dynamite show, as well as Arthur Ashe. So if we're around, we'll let you guys know and you say what's up to us. And we're here every Wednesday night with your AEW Dynamite post show. And like I said before, we're going to figure out what we're doing with Dark. So stay tuned to the social. But yes. Kate, man, it was a lot of fun. We covered a lot of stuff. I hope you had as much fun as I did.
I did. Thank you, as always, for steering the ship and the captain, the numero uno of the Mark Order.
No. I'm numero tres.
Matt is. I know, but you are our uno, though. You're our evil uno. You're our evil uno.
I'm not gonna lie to you, Kate. I've at one point was trying to find an evil uno mask so I could come on here one night wearing an evil uno mask.
Doesn't Matt can't. Have one?
He has one of their creeper masks that are no more.
Oh, okay.
And then I eventually, you know, the heartbreaker was I was looking around for it. And at one point Uno was selling some of his masks, but that was like, it was like a year ago. Like it was, I missed it like way late.
Man.
I'll throw this out there too. Cause I said it before in the Discord, cause I was talking about Will Hobbs, airbrushed overalls. And I've said it before in the Discord. Anybody wants me to wear something stupid on this show, you just got to hit us up. You can send it over.
Joe Evans already wants to hook you up with a Fuego shirt. So
listen, if somebody wants to get me something in my, now I'm not putting on a small t-shirt. I'm a big guy. Okay. I'm not putting on an extra small t-shirt. I'm not putting on anything in any size. If you get me something in my size, I'll wear it here on the air. Because you sent it to me. Just hit us up on social. We'll figure it out. Send me a shirt. Send me, you know, whatever. I don't care. Send me swoveralls. Remember those, Kate? We got to work on swoveralls.
That's right. We do.
Anyway, we're getting way off track and it's late. So, Kate, thank you so much for another fun night. I know you'll be back next week. I'll be back next week. The full crew will be back next week. So, thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And we will see you on the Mark Order podcast next week.
This concludes the Mark Order podcast. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming. Join the Mark Order.